It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. We've got a great show. My old friend from Tech TV, David Spark, returns after a multi-year absence. And Amy Webb is here. That means big thoughts, big thinking. We'll talk about the fact that the New York State Attorney General wants to blame Twitch and 4chan and Discord for the Buffalo shooting. Elon Musk's real plans. Amy explains all. And then Apple losing perhaps its most important employee because they wouldn't let him work from home. Come on, man. It's This Week in Tech coming up next.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 876, recorded Sunday, May 22nd, 2022. Elon and L. Ron. This episode of This Week in Tech is brought to you by Stamps.com. Start mailing and shipping with Stamps.com. Sign up with the promo code TWIT. You'll get our special offer, including a four-week trial, free postage, and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Go to Stamps.com, click the microphone at the top of the page, and enter the code TWIT. And by ExpressVPN. Be smart. Stop paying full price for streaming services and only getting access to a fraction of their content. Get your money's worth. Get 3 extra months free with a 1-year package at expressvpn.com/twit. And by Noom. Unlike other programs, Noom Weight uses a psychology-based approach to help people better understand their relationship with food and gives you skills and knowledge you need to build long-lasting positive habits. Sign up for your trial at noom.com/twit. And by Indochino. If you've got a big day coming up, getting the perfect look is no big deal with Indochino. Get $50 off any purchase of $3.99 or more by using the promo code TWIT at Indochino.com. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show we cover the week's tech news. And we have such a good panel today, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. Amy Webb is here, our favorite futurist from the Future Today Institute, author of The Genesis Machine, Our Quest to Rewrite Life in the Age of Synthetic Biology. I haven't seen you since the book came out. Is it doing well?
Book is doing really well. And I actually, Eric Schmidt gave me hives last week. We were at a conference together on a panel talking about AI, and yeah, he diverged and started talking about, he said some very, very nice things about me.
Wow.
And the book. And I was so, it was in front of this big group. I was so embarrassed, like in a good way, but I was so embarrassed. I broke out into hives everywhere, turned bright red. And that was like 3 minutes into the session.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. How embarrassing. Yeah. But that's
Amy, you have set up the challenge for both Leo and I. We have to get you to break out at hives. This is our goal.
It doesn't happen very often. It doesn't happen
very often. We've got 2 hours to do this, Leo.
David Spark is in the house. Oh, I love seeing David Spark. Longtime friend since going back to Tech TV. He's been on Twit many times. Not in a long time, though, so I'm really glad to get you.
It's been a while.
You have started a new network on security called the CISO. Do you pronounce it CISO or is that just me?
Yes, but if you go, we did a show, a live show in Australia, and there down under, they pronounce it CISO.
Router. So router. They call it router. Oh, CISO. Yes. Okay. So
CISO.
CISO. So I'm going to say CISO because that's
most of us say
in America.
CISO,
yeah. And so this is, you've got 5 podcasts all about security, which is great.
Yes.
Defense in Depth. Super Cyber Friday, Capture the CISO, Cybersecurity Headlines. Good job.
Capture the CISO is our new show.
I like
it's kind of like it's kind of like Shark Tank in that there are CISOs judging security vendors, but instead of like seeing full pitches, CISOs, which are chief information security officers, they come on and they've already watched the demo videos of the products and they're just having conversations with these security vendors, asking them, like, tell me more about your product and ask them relevant questions about it.
Nice.
You then, and that's kind of like what everyone wants to hear.
Yeah, the kind of thing you would be asking. Yeah. I think that's part of the problem with doing this kind of stuff is it tends to get very vendor heavy and ends up being an ad. So this is really good. This is a way to get some solid content.
It's the conversation, not the pitch.
I am drinking today some synthetic booze provided by Amy Webb. It's called Glyph, G-L-Y-P-H. It is, I wanted to say distilled in San Francisco, but I think it's probably created in a vat somewhere in San Francisco. Yeah. All the spirit, none of the rules. So I think we had talked about this on a previous show, right? The idea that they could, maybe it was in the Genesis machine, that they can make whiskey without actually putting whiskey barrels and all that.
Right. Basically, if you've got the molecular formula, the construct, you know, you can print out molecules and just distill in a different way. Hang on a second. I've got crazy different microphones going here.
Printed the molecules. Kind of like a Star Trek synthahol or, every science fiction has a synthetic whiskey. I'm just finishing the Bobaverse, and that's one of the first things they try to figure out how to make whiskey again.
Right.
So this is the show we give Amy Hives. I think that's a good that's a good goal you've established.
But we have a challenge.
We have a challenge.
You and I.
No,
we have to.
I can't do that to poor Amy. I just can't.
Please don't.
But
I had a very, very
compliments, right?
Yeah.
No. It was
came off a compliment, so she's not going to hate that.
No.
I'd never had anybody compliment. He just said very nice things, and it seemed very sincere, and it was kind of out of nowhere, and we were deep in the weeds on AI at that point, and he.
Well, also coming from Eric Schmidt.
Do you want us to go in the opposite direction? What's
the opposite of Hives?
Well, no, it's like she got the Hives.
Monkeypox. Let's not give her monkeypox.
Monkeypox. No. Let's not do that. Let's not do that tonight, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
Monkeypox is the new... I don't know, cause celebre. I don't want to celebrate it in any way.
It's the cool virus everybody wants to take to prom this year.
No. So I know everybody's afraid, and rightly so, that we might start talking about Elon. We're just going to get out of the way. It's going to be quick.
Knock it out.
It's going to be brief.
Like ripping off a Band-Aid.
Just rip off the Band-Aid, get it over with quickly. Elon, what's the status of Elon's Twitter deal? Is it up in the air?
It is up in the air based on the percentage of bots that are or the fake accounts that are on Twitter, of which it doesn't appear there's any third party that's verifying these. It just seems
No, there are third parties that are verifying it. There's been a couple of academics that, and there's an independent group that, to be fair, like built some type of tool. It's not bot or not. I forgot who it was. But there are groups that are pulling as much data as they can by doing samples. And to be fair, you know, it's hard to get a huge sample size. But I mean, I think we all know, I even know anecdotally, like there's a tremendous amount of bot activity. And there always has been.
I think it's way over 20%, though. That's the thing. I think
Elon was told it was 5%. And that's where he sent the poop emoji to the CEO of Twitter.
Yeah. None of it matters. He's trying to use this as a wedge to get out of the deal. And why did he try to get... The number of bots thwarting his investment is sort of a red herring, right? At this point,
he just wants. Do you think he really wants to get out of it? That's really what's going on.
I think what happened is that he bought up a bunch of shares. He got invited to be on the board. Realized that he had a fiduciary responsibility as a board of directors member, and he couldn't go around trash talking the CEO or others or the edit button or pick whatever you want, free speech. Then left because Elon doesn't want people telling him what to do. And I now think he just, you know, he's got that had repercussions. It had repercussions on the other businesses where his finances are tied up. So why tank Tesla over a social media, which a lot of us use, but let's face it, has a limited number of DAUs and
it's never made more than $1 billion in a year. If you pay $44 billion for something that's EBITDA is less than $1 billion, it's going to take you a long time.
No, but is there any history of any company being purchased at that level of multiple of yearly revenue?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't think so.
That's 44X. That seems 44.
I mean, I don't think it's that. I don't know if anyone's purchased anything at that.
And then I've heard people say, oh, now that it's off, watch while Microsoft swoops in. No, Microsoft doesn't want Twitter. No one wants Twitter. That's the whole point. Twitter's been trying to sell itself for years and not succeeded.
So
I don't know if Elon legitimately wanted it. I think he did. I think he found out that when it get down to it, he was going to have to come up with $21 billion of his own money. He leveraged himself against Tesla's stock. That opens him up as the stock drops, which it has. It's plummeted as a result to a margin call, which could put him out of business. It also it's also hard to get the rest of it, although he seems to have found Larry Ellison, gave him $1 billion, seems to have found a few other suckers, I mean investors, who are willing to give him money for something that is never going to pay off. So he's
this
got
could also
cold feet,
be a negotiation tactic.
It probably is, you know, an attempt to get
because
the price
down. Because the stock went down because of this. He, you know, his, what, $54 per
$54.20, because it's got to have something to do with marijuana or he won't do it.
Exactly. But, he showing how much it's going down because of his suspicions of the high percentage of fake accounts, then he could say, well, it doesn't really have X million of users. It has this percentage of users. So
doesn't matter.
Here, so I'm lowering
but
my
it
price.
Doesn't matter, as he well knows, because he made the deal, in fact, waiving due diligence. You don't get to say, I don't need to do due diligence. Here's the amount of money I'm going to pay. Sign on the dotted line. And then, oh, now I'm going to do due diligence. Too late.
Clearly, there have to be compliance people that he works with. There have to be lawyers. And I cannot imagine that job, having to run compliance.
The worst job ever.
For that. Yeah. I mean, I can't even wrap my head around what that must be like.
This is William Cohen, who is a M&A guy writing for Puck News. I like Puck News a lot. Elon's next moves. He says Elon played it like a Jedi up to a point, listening to his financial advisors, Sachs, Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan Chase, Allen & Company. His advisor, Rob Kindler, who was Cohen's old boss, so Cohen knows him well at Morgan Stanley, now vice chairman, global head of the M&A group. Followed all their instructions up to a point, but after, and this is what Cohen writes, after he won his prize, what seemed like a minimum effort, Elon started to lose his deal making poise. He neglected to tell the SEC. He basically started, trolling at Twitter, violating his non-disclosure. And he points out Elon's equity hold is still $14 billion, even with $1 billion from Ellison and Prince Alawid, who put in $1.9 billion. And, of course, the $4 billion in shares that he's already got that he doesn't have to buy again. He still has to come up with $14 billion. It could just be that Elon just kind of lost his head and now is trying to get out of it. Twitter's response is, yeah, no, we're holding you. They told the shareholders... let's go. That's a good price. We're going to take it. Elon says he can't move forward. He already agreed, says Twitter. They're going to make him.
Twitter doesn't have to make money because Twitter makes power. If you stop and think about the sort of Venn diagram of who's using Twitter, obviously there are many, many bots, but it's media people. Like, I'm a Twitter OG. A lot. So
it has an outsized importance in the
media community, right?
Yeah.
And tech community. And
would you grant Elon's political position community that it is the public square? I don't think it's the public square.
No, but here's the question that I would be raising, which is think of the amount of influence he's wielded in the past over the market. I mean, he made a crypto that nobody cared about become a thing, right? For some people.
Yeah.
Right. So another way to look at this is that Twitter doesn't have to make money. It just has to continue to make waves. And if you continue to get the right nexus of powerful people in that space talking,
do you think Larry Ellison
never has to earn revenue?
Is putting in $1 billion, Prince Alawid putting in $1.9 billion, not because they expect return on their investment, but because they expect power, they expect access.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what no other scenario makes sense to me.
There is a risk, though, because if Taylor Swift isn't tweeting just Prince Alawid and Larry Ellison.
No, I'm not saying like Ellison. no, I'm not. They don't have to tweet. right? The point is, if you, so this is a sort of deep state stuff. If you want politics, political decisions, policy to go a certain way.
Oh yeah, you don't speak out loud. You have others speak for you.
You want to be able to have influence,
control,
right?
And so there, control the Overton window, as it were.
That's right. And there could be an argument made at the moment that that's the real net benefit here, that this is not at all about monetizing.
Ooh, that's pretty ugly.
Whatever else.
It's kind of dark. That's a dark point of view.
It's that's my thing.
I want to say, though, Amy, you make a very good point in that, you know, think about just all of media on the internet, how hyper decentralized and splintered it's become.
Yes.
And bizarrely, Twitter is the only or the largest megaphone, I think, left in all media. I mean, I don't even think, you know, like network television doesn't even have the megaphone power that Twitter has. And so, Amy, you make a really, really good point here. I mean, it's the last bastion of literally world power that could be left. And
I mean,
you could actually buy it.
Yeah, there are other places where people have sort of scurried off to, Discord, Keybase, although I think I might literally be the only person that I know on Keybase at this point.
So. I know. I left as soon as they got sold to Zoom. I left. Yeah. But, you know.
There are other spaces, but the point is there is still something to be said for having a fairly high profile and using, you know, tweeting a poop emoji at a CEO. There is some power because it's being done in front of other people. And, you know, journalists, and a billion years ago, that was my first career. You know, they're looking at Reddit and they're looking at Twitter to start developing stories. And so there is this sort of network, right, that goes between broadcast media, especially, and Twitter, and really high profile, powerful people like Elon on Twitter.
I like your take. It's the only thing that makes a lot of sense. Cohen writes, my view is the Elon's antics in the last week or so have made him into a fool who's grabbing defeat from the jaws of victory. But in fact, he is playing 4D chess. If he can get the price, he's going to buy Twitter. In other words, you think he's going to buy Twitter. He's trying to get the price down. He may end up buying it for $54.20 because he doesn't have any choice. But it's worth it, is your point.
Right. Well, the other point is, now that we've got the financial, like an honest conversation happening about financials, what other investor is going to swoop in?
Yeah.
Right. And I mean,
Twitter has been for sale.
It's way overvalued
years
to begin with.
Yeah.
Right.
Nobody's going to buy Twitter.
So he could force the price down, change some of the rules, and then there would be a net benefit to getting, especially a lot of politicians back and getting them to talk openly, because it's an opportunity to wield power behind the scenes.
If I said to somebody, if you give me $44 billion, you could guarantee who the next president of the United States would be, that would be worth it to some people.
Mm-hmm. It absolutely would. And they're huge. He's in two industries, space economy, space tech, and autos that were not disrupted. There was no disruptive innovation happening really before him. And again, I am not an Elon fangirl to like at all. But the point is, he's very good at
both industries, yeah, heavily regulated by the government, both industries heavily subsidized by the federal mm-hmm. government. For Elon, in those businesses, having control of the levers of power in the federal government are vital to both those
Absolutely.
Businesses.
Yeah.
So he doesn't need to make money on Twitter. He just needs the power Twitter confers. I think he nailed it.
Right. Yeah. That's the only part of this that makes any sense to me whatsoever. That, or he is, he has a mental health issue that would cause him to make.
I mean, we're always asking that question. Is he crazy?
Amy, your first answer was better.
I'm saying it delicately because, you know, listen, it's a lot of people.
He could be a troll. He could be attention whore. He could be saying, well, I'm the richest man in the world. But I think he would not risk Tesla, which he has done, unless there were something of real value there. I think the shareholders would not. Yeah.
Whoever's that board, the people that he answers to, again, everybody's got fiduciary responsibilities, and it just wouldn't. Right. There's no other reason that this would make sense.
He'd like us to think he has billionaire brain and he's, you know, just, but I think maybe he's crazy like a fox. That's really an interesting point of view. David, if he did this and Twitter's price went down and suddenly others saw it as the potential power lever that it is. Who else would buy it? Microsoft doesn't care about that, do they? Who else would buy it?
No, but it's you just have to look at the list of billionaires and who's willing to do something like that.
I could
that.
See Jeff Bezos wanting to buy
Bezos,
it.
Possibly Larry Ellison, who already has yep. a billion sunk in.
Rupert Murdoch. I would think Rupert would jump
Rupert
on
Murdoch,
this.
Yes, good point. That's the only list you can really look at. After,
right.
You know.
Somebody who has so much money, but this is what you get to when you get oligarchs running a country. This is the place you get to.
But just think about it. Power can be purchased up to a point, but Amy made a great point there that Twitter's got a level of power that there's no other mechanism that has that level. And the thing that's also we've seen in the media happening, and this is what always fascinates me, is just think of the sheer number of news stories that are about a Twitter feud or somebody said this on Twitter. I'm astonished by just the sheer number of news stories that are just commenting.
Totally lazy journalism.
Tweets.
Totally lazy journalism, but it's happening
completely lazy.
Everywhere all the time. Yeah.
Yes.
And that's why.
Anyways, Amy wins that story.
Amy wins. We have a winner. You're amazing. Wonderful. You are so smart. You are incredible. Is it working?
It's not happening. It's not happening.
All right. I'll work her a little later.
You know what?
We'll get the hives coming out.
I wasn't going to bring up Elon. But you know what? That's what's great about having Amy and David on is there's a new fresh take on it. And I think after all this conversation over the last 6 weeks, you have finally come up with the real reason, the real story behind all of this. And frankly, it's the most chilling of all possible worlds.
I have zero data, by the way, to back anything.
You don't need
it. Pure speculation.
You don't need
but
it.
It's
what happened.
I feel like
2016. Social
logic.
Media happened in 2016, yeah. Right? If Trump had $44 billion, he would buy Twitter. He's trying to create Truth Social to kind of create an alternate universe, but there's a mistake. All you've got is the base there. What you have at Twitter is so much more useful.
Mm-hmm. You also have a working code at Twitter.
Well,
which is not the case
yeah,
on the
apparently
other.
Truth Social is not exactly working yet. All right. I want to take a little break because then we are going to get into something a little more serious and a little more depressing, which is the Buffalo killing spree and the decision of the Attorney General of the state of New York, goaded by the governor of New York, to investigate gun stores? No. To investigate right-wing terrorist organizations? No. To investigate Twitch and Discord and 4chan. There's a lot to say there. We'll talk about that in just a bit. What a panel. So good to have you both. David, how long has it been since you've been on? Did you have you counted up?
It's been many years.
Many years.
I'm trying to remember. I was in your original cottage way back when.
I know.
And
you're the OG Twit.
Yeah, I was on that. And then I've done a few of your other shows, but it had been a long time.
Yeah.
And also now I'm back to doing traditional media again.
I think that's what happened. You went over to the other side.
I was in content marketing. I was in that for a while. Yes. But now I'm back to traditional.
I think that's
media.
What happened. I try to avoid marketers, PR people, because you know this is supposed to be tech journalists. But
I'm totally on board with that. I have rules for my own show too with vendors, so I am completely and 100% respectful of that.
It's very old-fashioned, that concept. Mm-hmm. Nobody does it anymore. Let's take a little break and talk about our sponsor. That's who makes this all possible. Unless you're a member of Club Twit and you're watching this ad-free. In that case, thank you, because, of course, you make this possible, too. Stamps.com has been a sponsor of our shows for many years, probably since David was here last. We've been using it, more than a decade. I think they started advertising 10 years ago. I have stamps, actual stamps with my head on them. But I made a mistake when I made them. I didn't make forever stamps. So every couple of months, I have to go to Debbie and I say, could you print me some more stamps, penny stamps, 2-cent stamps, so I can still use the picture with my head on it? That's the problem, right? The postage changes. Stamps.com solves this. What is Stamps.com? That's just the easiest way if you're a business, to do mailings, all the services of the post office without going to the post office. So With your computer and your printer, you don't even need a postage meter. You can print real U.S. postage for packages, for envelopes, for anything you would want to mail. Discounts you won't get at the post office. And now, and if you've been hearing these ads and saying, well, someday this should put you over the top, now it's UPS as well as USPS. So you get the Postal Service and UPS and discounts you can't get anywhere else. And Stamps.com will even do the great thing. Stamps.com, you say, okay, I want to print this package. It'll say, you know, it'd be cheaper to ship the UPS, or it'd be cheaper to ship Postal Service. It'll actually pit them one against the other to get you the best rate. Discounts like crazy, up to 30% off Postal Service rates, 86% off UPS. That's going to save you every single time you mail a package. More than 1 million businesses use Stamps.com because it's easy, it's fast, it'll save you on shipping, it'll save your time, and it also looks more professional. Whether you're on Amazon or Etsy or eBay, or you're a full-blown warehouse shipping out truckloads of orders, those packages look more professional. That you can print right on the envelopes with your company logo, the return address. It's just a great mailing and now shipping solution for you. And it'll, by the way, save you time, too, because it'll take all the information from those websites automatically. It'll fill out forms that you need, whether it's international shipping forms or certified mail. All that stuff just fills it out automatically. And by the way, easy. You'll be up and running in minutes. You can do it before the show's over, printing official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, anywhere you want to send. They've been a partner of this show since 2012. If you haven't signed up yet, I don't know what you're waiting for. Do it right now. So start mailing and shipping now with Stamps.com. Keep more money in your pocket every day. Go to Stamps.com. Click the link that says, heard us on a podcast, and enter the offer code TWIT. Wow, what a deal you're going to get. Not only a four-week trial, you're going to get a ton of free postage you can use over a period of time. A digital scale, Stamps.com. No long-term commitments, no contracts, just a chance to try it. Go to Stamps.com. Click the microphone at the top of the page. Enter TWIT and enter a new world of mailing and shipping. Stamps.com. I think Mike Masnick's headline on TechDirt.com kind of says it all. New York launches ridiculous, blatantly unconstitutional investigations, end quote, into Twitch and Discord, semicolon, deflecting blame from New York's own failings. We know that the shooter, I'm not going to, by the way, say his name, not going to give him any publicity, but we know that he opened a Discord chat room before the shooting. Anybody can do that. It's free. We have a Discord room. It couldn't be simpler to set up. Invited people in to discuss his plans. The police say it was as many as 15 people in there before he did anything. Those people knew what he was about to do. He then started up a Twitch stream, which only ran for a couple of minutes as he launched into his attack. Twitch pulled it down right away. I think I saw 40 people saw it on Twitch. But since then, 40 million people have seen it as it's been passed around. David, is Twitch or Discord to blame for any of this?
Well, I don't think any of us believe this. And this is why we're all kind of shocked at the attacks of Twitch and Discord for that. But it's interesting that 15 people in Discord heard what they were
did
the
nothing.
Person was saying.
Did nothing.
Nothing. Now, but this goes to, and this is something we talk about on our shows about cybersecurity, about where security awareness training is. You know, there's this fear of, well, it's probably nothing. I don't want to cause a stir. I don't want to say anything. And there's a fear of that. But man, there is you need to say something when you see something like this. And it's not for you to deal with it. It's for authorities to deal with it. And we need everybody's eyes and ears to act as, you know, monitors for these kinds of things. And, you know, don't cast blame when you may not know something that's going on. But if someone is talking about some serious, violent, dangerous things on a social channel, alert an authority.
I have to say, the shooter was clearly radicalized into believing, he's only 18 years old, into believing this BS replacement theory, which, you know, frankly, Fox News has been flogging. But I don't see any, I don't see anybody investigating Fox News, nor do I think they should. This, the First Amendment protects that.
Yes.
I disagree.
Good.
I disagree. I didn't mean to interrupt. I'm sorry.
No, please. Should Twitch, Discord, 4chan and 8chan, they're also under investigation. Now that's the internet. They didn't say anything about investigating news media. Probably realizing that they're going to, you know, that's a potential problem with the First Amendment. But should they be held responsible?
So I'm not a constitutional scholar or lawyer. I made a last minute decision not to go to law school. So I'm with those caveats being said, I did pretty well in the LSAT. But with those caveats being said, the First Amendment was written in 1791. And the point of it, in 1791, was to require Congress to restrict speech and to restrict the press in promotion of the public good. So, what's happened
to require Congress?
It requires basically
it says Congress shall make no law respecting establishment of religion or prohibiting free speech thereof, free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or of the right of people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for redress. It's very simple. It says Congress shall make no law. By the way, we should point out that almost immediately after this, the Sedition Acts were passed, which did exactly that and was used to prosecute people like crazy. So the history of enforcement of the First Amendment is very checkered, to say the least.
No, again, I think the original intent of the founders, I wasn't there, so I don't have quantitative data on this, but it's my interpretation that the founders originally were just trying to make it so that the public good was what was preserved. And at the time, so again, this is like this is 1700, 1791. It was very expensive to create speech in written form and hand it out. So like, you know, functioning newspapers were sort of just getting started, and it was very, very expensive. So free speech was meant to be not restricted in certain cases. But at that period of time when this was invented, there was no completely unfettered speech, and certainly there were no algorithms. I would ask the question, does a strict interpretation of the First Amendment, which is it becomes one of these like super polarizing things. There's just no room for nuance. I would ask, in an age of algorithmic determinism and completely unfettered speech that's also unedited and can be taken out of context, you know, does our strict interpretation of free speech make sense? And I don't think, I know that I'm in a minority here, but I actually don't think that it does. I'm not saying we go the direction of China.
So let's say we go down that direction, Amy. Let's say we go down the direction. Yeah. Then becomes the issue of who then decides? Who is the grand decider? And that becomes a big issue in itself. I should mention that we have more updated laws since the First Amendment. And I was feeling that Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act actually protects, you know, or, you know, groups like Discord and Twitch, which essentially, and I'm quoting here, no provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as the publisher or speaker of any information provided by another information content provider. So essentially, they're not, and we've dealt, and this has come up many times, and this is just for any like hate speech or pornography or anything else that appears on some type of service, that they are protected for liability because someone else published something on
and that's
service.
Why what you're saying totally makes me nervous, because there have been a lot of people who have said, let's abandon Section 230. It's too broad.
Right. This is,
and I disagree wholeheartedly, because without Section 230, there is no moderation. In fact, Mike Masick at Detector points out Twitch might have been, by the new Texas social media law, prevented by that law from pulling down the stream. They would have to justify it and then could be sued over it by the new Texas law.
So again, I think the problem here is that we are thinking with too many constraints and parameters. Let's go back to the year 2000.
Yeah, let's just start from scratch and let's rewrite. What would you say as a founding mother today that should be our constitutional right?
In the year, I want to address the problem. In the year 2000, I was at the Columbia Graduate School of Journalism. So great school if you want to be a journalist and pay a lot of money for the privilege of having a degree. I'm in the first ethics class, and I had just moved back to the United States from Japan, and it was like I had traveled back in time from the future because of the technology that we had here, and it was, you know, not comparable in any way. So we spent an hour and a half looking at the Newsweek and Time magazine covers of O.J. Simpson. Some of you will remember that it was Time magazine that ran the unedited version. One of the magazines ran an unedited photo, his mugshot.
I remember
the other one darkened it. Okay, so this is everybody's favorite. It was first day of ethics class. And the question that we were being asked was, should journalists be allowed to use digital cameras and digital editing software? Was that the right thing to do?
Here's the Time magazine cover. Here's the New York cover. Now, and you can see they darkened OJ in the Time cover.
Here's what I said. My response to that question was, why are we having this conversation? On my phone, which I realize doesn't exist yet in the United States, but this phone in the year 2000, I've got a camera in this phone. Pretty soon, literally everybody is going to be taking pictures with their phones, and we will be able to send things fast. And the question, should journalists be allowed to do this, is the wrong question. To me, nobody wanted to have that. Nobody wanted to engage in
this
conversation.
So Time's cover is protected, but Congress can't make a law saying you can't darken somebody's image on the cover of your magazine.
My point is we're asking the wrong questions. It's not should Section 230 be scrapped or rewritten. It's not, you know, we have to approach these conversations with better questions and more nuance. And David, I don't have an answer to who gets to be the arbiter of what the new rules look like. What I'm actually in favor of is, in this particular case, an incremental approach that as technology changes, we should not be playing catch up. We should rather be creating policy and laws that are able to keep pace with the changes.
That actually makes sense. That's a very reasonable thing to say, and I agree with it.
Right, but historically, you know,
it's hard to do.
It's policy and regulations keeping pace with technology does not have a good history, at all. And so, go ahead.
No, I interrupted you. I'm sorry. You go ahead.
I'll just complete is what happens is organizations trying to protect their own brand develop their own sort of rules and regulations of what can and cannot be on the platform. And the hope is they can do that. Look, Twitch, you know, if someone's doing something horrific on their platform, there's only a certain amount of speed that you can catch it and stop it. I mean, the number of people who are monitoring it is an infinite. So some stuff slips through for a period of time. And fortunately, you know, Twitch was able to take this down. More my concern is we need to educate the populace of when you see scary dialogue going online, you know, we don't want to get into a state where we're reporting on our neighbors, but there has to be a state of if someone's going to yell fire in a movie theater, we need to report that. You know, there is a very clear line at that point.
Right. But so again, just to untangle a few things. First of all, from a technology point of view, there's absolutely a way to solve this problem. China is doing it every day through brute force and really smart machine learning.
But you did say you don't want it. Absolutely possible. You don't. I mean, China just passed a law that said you can only be upbeat and positive.
Right. I don't think that's the right way. But here's the issue. The challenge that we face in this country with just about everything is that there's a monetary incentive tied to everything.
It's a huge problem.
So the reason there is a reason that between whatever 2010, 2011, 2014, over and over, I was at Twitter talking about some of these issues. And the problem is that if you make the bad parts of Twitter go away, you know, that's partially what drives people to have those, you know, it's what partially drives people there. So part of the challenge is that we've got the wrong incentive structure to try to compel these companies to fix things. There are parallels in artificial intelligence. We know that there are all kinds of huge transformer models that are very great, but have been trained on data or bad data. Sorry. So like we know that these problems exist, but there's no incentive to fix any of it. In fact, there's it's going to be met with a penalty. There's a financial disincentive to fix these things. So what I would like to see is totally different legislation that doesn't focus on how are we going to define this particular act being shown on video at this particular moment in time, right? Because it's a moving target. It's always going to change. Is there a way that we can compel the platforms to promote, to attack what they know is bad stuff head on through incentives that are tied to revenue? I think it's the only, because nobody's going to come to the table and do this voluntarily. It's falling apart. The Supreme Court at Facebook is falling apart. We've got our own government agency where a misinformation, disinformation board didn't work for, you know, reasons that are tied to disinformation itself, which is tied to how the platforms make money.
But Amy, don't you think if there could be financial incentives attached to this, don't you think we would have seen this by now? Because, I mean, I like conceptually what you're saying, but I don't understand I can't even grok how the heck that would happen.
Yeah. So again, we just haven't done it before. So there is a carrot and stick model that can be accomplished through all kinds of things that are going to be wildly unpopular. but we know work, right? Tax incentives. There are lots of ways to achieve this if companies can commit to measure and enforce making sure that content is in the sort of is being generated for the public good. And I know that this immediately, the easier thing to argue about and have a conversation about is censorship. The harder thing to do is to solution it, right? To get to a solution that involves a different type of incentive structure.
Is it going to come from government? Is that where it's going to come from?
You know,
it's not going to come from the companies because they're.
I don't think so. The companies are going to fight that, and they're going to have right.
You've really raised a larger issue, though. Larry Lessig, the great Larry Lessig, who was for a long time a strong advocate for eliminating copy protection and changing copyright law, finally gave up and realized I can't do this because of the perverse financial incentives. Mm-hmm. And the money in Congress, he said, we can't do anything until we get money out of politics. And that became his cause. By the way, he's still working on that. But I don't think
he's still working on that.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to ever happen. So I understand if you could say, well, if there were no perverse financial incentives, we might be able to come up with a framework. But that's like saying, you know, if the moon were made of cotton candy, we could all live on Mars. I mean,
it's just different. It's just different. It requires reperception. Reperception is the art of taking the data that surround you at any given moment and looking for the white spaces.
And this is what you're so good at, getting people out of the box. This is what you do.
You know, all we have to do is spend a little time, not us right now, but like a huge group of people should just spend some time batting this different idea around. And if you get to the end and decide this is not going to work, fine. The problem is that
we're
just
not even
never,
thinking about it. We're not even going.
No. And I feel like I know a lot of the people who listen to the show are the ones who have those great ideas. And sometimes you bring those ideas up at work or you're afraid to because you don't want to be ostracized. And like, because it's different equals bad, right? Different should equal curiosity. Let's exercise our curiosity and see where we get. And at the end, we get to a bad place. Fine. We're going to be in no worse situation than we are today.
I agree with you. We should do all that. But I also think, given the exigencies of the world as it is, real politics, the real world, we are lucky we have something so simple and so clear as the First Amendment and Section 230, which is, by the way, very short, very succinct description of and yes, there may be a better way than that, but because they're so simple and so clear, and they have, and I think they have worked for the most part for so long, I think that's a good fallback.
If they were, if they were simple and clear, there would be no ambiguity. And
well, there's going to be debate.
We would not have centuries of case law arguing
there's
what the
debate.
Interpretation actually means.
But that's the nature of the Constitution and the nature of the world, is, and that's why you have courts. I don't think that that's the wrong thing. That's kind of more of what you were talking about. Let's refine this. But don't you think is there any country in the world that is doing something that you think is a good direct? I understand nothing's perfect, but a good direction that we should be looking at is the Chinese. This new Chinese rule is very interesting. Is it a good rule?
No, of course not. I think that the amount of policing that happens in China, I mean, for God's sake, that there are people who are worried at this point about using VPNs to talk about the absolutist COVID policies, zero tolerance throughout the country. You know, even people who live outside of China who use Weibo and some of the other social networks who clearly have a different IP, they're being targeted by people. They're not bots. They're actual people. They're being targeted and attacked with propaganda and being ousted as foreign spies or people trying to take down the CCP. So no, I don't think that model is good. You know, I see Scandinavia, and I know that I bring it up a lot, and I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but, you know, we don't see a lot of the serious extremes. There are problems, but Norway, Sweden, Finland, you know, it's just, you don't see a lot of the same volume.
Well, but there, I mean, Anders Breivik killed 77 people in Norway about 20 years
ago. That was
ago.
A, right. I mean, there was a horrific incident in Sweden, but it's not, you know, two weekends ago, we had awful, or I guess this was last weekend, there were multiple. Mass, you know, I mean, it's.
The Chinese, this is a new rule. And by the way, a very excellent thread from Kendra Schaefer. From a few months, I guess almost a year ago now, about the Chinese cyberspace watchdog CAC regulations, many of which I think privacy advocates in the U.S. would say, ooh, yeah, good. But the funny thing is, this is the funny quote, the algorithm's recommendation service provider should adhere to mainstream values. By the way, when the CAC publishes that, you know what that means, mainstream values. Actively spread positive energy and promote the application of algorithms for the better. It's very communist utopianism speech.
I there is this paradox that has yet to be solved in the United States. Everybody seems to be very concerned, or at least they talk about being very concerned about their privacy. They don't want to be surveilled.
Right.
And at the same time, they want absolute free speech.
Everybody else should be surveilled.
There is a tension. There's also no acknowledgement that we are all constantly being surveilled all of the time by the same exact platforms that so in a cloaked way, you know, there's just huge piles of data and all of these companies are using the data for the purpose of making more money, right? For advertising. That somehow isn't defined as speech. But people seem that there's a paradox between, again, like what we get so upset about. I wish there was a way to have a conversation that it did not immediately devolve to, well, who's going to decide this is censorship, you know, China. It's important that we have these conversations, and I really hope everybody listening will be willing to engage in a more nuanced version of that conversation, because a lot of you are the people who are going to help build this other future, I hope.
I agree with you, and I'm trying, but it's hard for me to imagine a framework that isn't just transferring control to another party, right?
I mean, that's what it is. But there's two different ways also to do about this, and this goes into what you were talking about with regards to privacy. And I want to give some credit to Davi Ottenheimer of Inrupt. That's Tim Berners-Lee's
TBL's thing, yeah.
Yes, his company. And Davi works for him. And I literally just before this show, I talked with him. And this goes to another story that's on our list about the fact that these tools that we use are sharing our information, you know, hundreds of times, more so in the U.S. than even in the U.K.
Terrifying. Yeah.
For that matter. And we don't get to decide that. They're deciding for us. There's so many decisions that are being made for us about our own information, which is kind of tragic. Now, this is INRUP's whole charge is to reverse that, where you control your own information as to who it goes to. And so so you know where it's being gone, where it's going, and it's being used. And actually, and I thought quite the opposite, but what Davi said is advertisers really, really love this kind of concept where, well, we know people truly like this because they individually approved, they wanted it. And that shows that, you know, their money that they're spending on advertising, and I know I'm sort of directing this slightly differently, is actually being used appropriately. So if we get to a point where people are self-directed, can take ownership of their information, and it's not used unknowingly by them, then that is a good direction to go. Now, per what you were saying, Amy, as to somebody or having a conversation of how we're going to find the defining line of what can and can't be said and how much it can be said and on what platforms, we've already been having this conversation. I don't think this is the first time it's been brought up.
I feel like it's authoritarianism in any fashion that you could think of. If you're not a absolutist on free speech, then you're giving somebody control of speech. And I don't think in any situation that that's going to be acceptable, because even if you trust that person today, you know, the reins of power could be passed on tomorrow. I feel like free speech absolutism is the only way to go here. I know that's exactly what you're arguing against, Amy. Am I right?
Again, it's me. So generally speaking, I'm not in favor of any absolutism, regardless of what it
is. But anything that would say, you can't say, I feel like if we just let everybody speak, algorithms are a problem because we are amplifying artificially mm-hmm. some speech. So I agree, that's a problem. But if you could say everybody can say whatever they want and everybody else could judge everything that they say, if you get the algorithms out of it, mm-hmm. that's true free speech. Nobody's amplified over anybody else. One of the things that the internet has given us is a much more democratic communications medium. So everybody can have a voice if they want. Let everybody yeah. speak. Teach people how to think critically. Teach people to think critically about what they read. Do not mm-hmm. algorithmically amplify stuff mm-hmm. so that, you know, you don't get radicalized. Isn't that the only possible solution? Anything else is somebody, whether it's you or President Biden or Donald Trump, saying yeah. that's okay, that's not okay, or Google saying that's okay, not okay. I don't want to see that. Mm-hmm. I think that's always fraught.
Okay, so let me offer a counterpoint. So broadcast media in the United States, and in particular, National Public Radio. So actually, there's a listener, Domenico Zafora, sorry if I mispronounced your name, who brought this up on Twitter literally just now. We have standards and practices. You can't just broadcast anything you want only on
the airwaves. NPR? You can on, that's just an FCC right.
regulation. Yeah, different rules okay. on the internet.
But the internet, you can say anything you want.
I'm well aware of that. But again, I'm trying to make an analogy here. So what, you know, the platform in a way is like this notebook that I'm holding up. This is also a platform and I can write anything that I want on it, right? And if I write horrible things, I guess, or if something horrible happens, nobody's going to sue the maker of this notebook, right? I'm going to be the one that gets in trouble. And so I think that's the position that modern media has taken. We're just the platform, we are just distributing. There have been questions about whether or not algorithms are entitled to the same rights to speech as humans are, and that has yet to be decided. But I have to ask a question. If we continue to, you know, you can't say certain words on NBC at 8 o'clock at night, nor can you show nudity or certain types of violence. Why do we hold, I mean, I know legally why we hold broadcast media to a different standard than a platform, but from a functional societal point of view, If we are free speech absolutists, then why hold broadcast media to some standards?
Because that
and they distribute content.
A time of scarcity, just that scarcity you were talking about. But as scarcity goes away, and scarcity is going away thanks to the internet, I don't think you'd have to do those regulations anymore. And so because there were three networks and there were it was a scarcity of the airwaves and there was no other way to do it, you had some regulation. But let's get rid of the scarcity, which we have. I think the regulation goes away too, and it did. We don't have equal time. We don't have the seven dirty words. None of that. And I think that that's a good thing. And if you thought that Twit would be full of expletives and you didn't want that for yourself or your family, you wouldn't listen. That's fine.
I wouldn't listen, but I am not a 15-year-old kid who's hanging out. Listen,
that's up to the parents. If you want, I mean, a parent has the right to regulate their children. That's different.
But we know that that's not happening.
Like, well, I mean, that's not, you know, then Big Brother doesn't get to come in and fix it. I don't care if that's not happening.
Here's the question that I would love for us to ask. If we go into the future 20 years, what kind of life do we want to have? Do we want to have more, like, because we have these multifaceted problems, all of which at this point now intersect with speech, whether that's catastrophic climate change or horrific gun violence, or, you know, economic insanity. We have all of these problems. All of them intersect with both algorithms, you know, tech and speech. So we have to ask the challenging question. 20 years from now, if we make no change, what's our baseline? What's the baseline scenario? And from my vantage point, the baseline scenario is not a good one. We are in a worse situation. I don't have an immediate answer. I'm not suggesting that the government or some arbitrary body of people start policing what we say, how, to whom, and where. But I also don't think we should continue to support total anonymity and totally unfettered. Anything goes without any type of consequence in a real way. Because the problem here is that I don't see us mitigating these other problems. And so we wind up more politically polarized. We wind up with more economic uncertainty. Again, this is just my opinion. And I think we wind up with more totally unnecessary violence.
I think the solution to that is small communities of affinity. There has to be communication between the communities. I think that's one of the reasons I think the Fediverse works, Mastodon works compared to Twitter. Those are individual communities that enforce their own by agreement rules that you participate with or not, depending on whether you agree with those rules. That seems to work quite well.
Yeah, absolutely. They're federated models. I just want to say one other quick thing because I think it's worth noting. I know all of this sounds really speculative and like I'm thinking like worst possible cases here. For those of you who are not familiar with what people in my position do, so technically the term is futurist, but what we really do is strategic foresight. We use data sets and build different types of models to look for long-term indications of change. So my academic background is game theory and economics. This was before the journalism stuff. So this is not just a crazy lady on a Sunday afternoon spouting off, you know. But I think that's important because, again, there is data and evidence rooted in what I've been stating, what I've been talking about. A federated model works really well, but that requires boundaries. Now, maybe some type of DAO is a potential solution here. DAO is a governance model versus an investment model. Could be actually kind of awesome. Smart contracts, making a lot of this totally transparent. Maybe that's another, you know, there is emerging technology that we could use to solve our current technology problems, which would be kind of awesome, you know?
Yeah, good. I mean, and by the way, nobody, if I read the chat room to you, nobody second guesses your credentials or your...
I'm on the chat room and that's why I'm like somebody within your right to say this, by the way. It was like, I don't know, what's she talking about?
Oh, there's always going to be people there. But I think if you look in general...
Oh, did somebody disagrees with someone on the internet? What's going on?
In general, it is widely recognized that your contributions are always thought-provoking and of real interest. And I'm always trying to pin you down, and I can't, because I don't know if you're a wide-eyed optimist, a complete dystopian pessimist.
I'm a pragmatist.
I'm a pragmatist. Yes.
I am.
Yes.
I am. And I'm not a techno-utopian. My job is to model plausible outcomes. That's it. That's all I do. It's very boring most of the time.
I think it's appropriate to imagine. In fact, it's important to imagine a goal state where if, you know, we could forget all the...
Yeah. Totally.
Just to think, what would we like, I think, is a really good exercise without worrying about how hard it's going to be to get there. That's right.
And that's a good exercise for everybody. Go into the future. If 20 years feels too wrong, like try 10. What should people, like in an ideal world, what type of speech do we have? Because again, we haven't really talked about GPT-3.
I will provide one thing that I would like. One source of truth that we can all agree that is actually truth, as if something actually happened. This has become our major, major problem we've seen over the last number of years, is that we don't agree that something is black is black and something is white is white. We can't agree on legitimate facts.
So here's how, in my opinion,
that is scary.
How you handle that. It's all, in my opinion, it's all societal. It's all norms. That's why I like a federated model. I like a small community model, because the best way to decide that is not for any individual to say that's facts, that's not facts, but for a community to censure liars. And when the community says, you know what, that's a lie, that sky is not green, we all agree about that. And those of you who say the sky is green, no, you're wrong.
But the community agreement. That. It's the argument of whether the sky is green has now become a political issue.
No, I understand.
It's no longer a factual
And you know
issue.
What? There may be polarization, and there may be groups that then say, well, we believe the sky is green. We're going to go off and do our own thing. That's fine. That's fine. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think in every case you get in trouble when you become authoritarian and say, no, we're going to enforce the fact that this is a fact. Because, David, as you well know, one man's fact is another man's fiction, and it's impossible to say for many things, not everything, but for many things, it's impossible to say what a fact
is. There are things
is.
That we all watch on video that people argue didn't actually happen.
No, I know.
And that is the sad reality.
I know. And what are you going to do about that? Are you going to bash somebody in the head because they disagree? What are you going
to
do?
Here's the answer.
You have to let them have that opinion.
Stop giving airtime to the people who point out
something
that's blatantly obvious.
The problem is amplification. And so that's the real problem.
It's the amplification. Yes.
That's always the problem. And algorithms amplify, media amplifies. But I think we're going in a better direction, aren't we? I think it's much more democratic. There are many more voices. Yes, right now it sounds chaotic. There's a lot of people talking at you. We're going to have to learn ways of dealing with that, learn ways to judge whether something's true or not. That's part of the strife that's going on right now. But in the long run, we're moving in the positive direction. But I think I've always said algorithms are a big problem. And I don't think you come up with a better algorithm, a fact, fiction, hot dog or not algorithm. I think you just stop algorithms.
But there's also the training of just journalism in general. The training of journalism in general says, get both sides of the story. Like day one in journalism school, it's taught to you.
I know, and that's wrong too. I agree.
Sometimes there's not a second side of the story.
No, I agree.
And oftentimes there's five sides to the story. And this is the problem. And you'll see so many stories in just your local TV news, like, what's the opposite side of the story? There is no opposite side in many cases. Sometimes it's just a fact, report it, be done.
Amy, go ahead.
So I found journalism school to be really challenging because Leo, you were just talking about the sky is blue, the sky is green. Like my vision for the future is that we all walk outside and somebody says the sky is blue and somebody else is like, the sky is green. And the sky is green person says, like, come at me, bro. let's talk, why do you think the sky is blue?
Let's talk about it.
I think the central problem that we face and the reason that we like algorithms is because people are very uncomfortable with uncertainty. And part of what algorithmic selection does is it reduces the tyranny of choice. So we have more, we're goaded into thinking we have more certainty and that the decisions that are being made for us are good ones. And then our behavior starts to change to match. I think that's what drove a lot of people to Discord, including me. I've spent tons less time on Twitter in the past year than I did 5 years ago. In part because of like, just, you know, I'm getting like every day, just, crypto bots and crypto bros are just, it's me with a whole bunch of hashtags and, you know, it's like meaningless, like horrible, right?
Twitter goes through those stages, doesn't it? Yeah,
it does. Well, Discord.
So what you've done, what you've done with Discord is exactly what I was just talking about. Would you form your own community?
Right. So, you know, I've got a Discord community. I had a Keybase community.
It's a shame because Twitter, what Twitter is, the potential for Twitter is to bring people from different communities together to discuss. It could be a great discussion ground, right?
It could be, but you and I have both been harassed pretty,
it's nasty,
you know, prolifically. It's, you know, and whatever, like it's more inconvenient. I don't actually care. People have said some pretty horrible things.
Yeah, I just
and
ignore I'm it, very, of course. Yeah.
I'm a very confident person, so I'm quite fine. But it just makes the experience less. And every time I've reported to Twitter, the harassment that meets their own criteria, it's not dealt with. And even if it is dealt with, it's like a hydra, right? You got like five new.
Well, and that's what's disturbing is that all of the things Elon has said have shown an ignorance of what the issues are. Mm-hmm. Twitter's, I think, done a lot, believe it or not. They've gotten better. I don't know if you've noticed, but it has gotten a little bit better. I do think we need a place, if we all go into communities, where the communities can come converse. I mean, I really like Mastodon for that reason.
Yeah.
There needs to be some porosity to the bubble that you're in. Otherwise, you all believe the sky is green. And so it's important that there be communication. I mean,
are you using Mastodon? Or David, are you using Mastodon?
I am not.
No. But I wonder from a CISO perspective.
We have our own Mastodon instance, by the way, twit.social. So.
Yeah.
What is aggravating me is we should never have a conversation about whether the sky is blue or green. Like some certain facts just are facts. But what's happening is we are wasting time on these conversations and these issues that should have never, ever come up in the first place. And it's often to divert our attention from something that is real, there should be
a lot of nasty manipulation going on.
Yeah, or,
and that's
or
your fear, of course, if Elon gets Twitter, is he would use it to manipulate the electorate. And so there are people willing to manipulate. And the solution to them is to solve this algorithmic amplification issue. And I'm not sure what the answer to that is, but you're right. And maybe the other issue is for us to become more aware of manipulation, to raise our consciousness, to understand we're being manipulated. And maybe there's a lot of people, probably the majority of people, who don't care. They like being manipulated.
But we fall for it all the time.
The three of us, I think, are natural skeptics. We're always even debating with ourselves about what we believe. But there are, I would say the vast majority of people just want to be told what to believe and love that warm bath of no doubt, right, of pure faith. And if a charismatic leader comes along and tells them a fairy tale that makes them feel good, they
also
love the idea that they can turn off that very hard thing, which is thinking. And I unfortunately think that that's a natural human tendency. So that may be
here,
also
let me ask, this is not on our show notes for tonight, but I got a good example. Why is everybody so fascinated with the Johnny Depp and Amber Heard trial? Because it is showing up. That is the thing that shows up on Twitter, right? It's being live streamed.
I could tell you why. Do you want to know why?
Well, example that illustrates.
You know
I mean, it's
we
tied exactly
gossip.
To what you just said.
But, it's
that's
a biological imperative that we talk about these things, emotions at a distance, and feelings. It's why we have celebrity. We love that. And I think it's just biological.
But we love to watch celebrities getting knocked down.
Yeah, yeah, we love all that. Yeah, we love the gossip.
We love to watch someone at a high power falling.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it just plays to our worst tendencies.
Right. So this is the challenge with artificial general intelligence and with algorithms in general.
They're going to be as stupid as we are. Is that what you're saying?
No, it's just, it's really hard to parse the things that draw us in. And I know there's like plenty of companies that have promised that they can like figure out intent and predictability and all these other things. But on a very base level, I mean, yes, we're drawn into celebrity gossip, but why? Why that trial and not some other trial? Because arguably, like, Johnny Depp's a little past his prime, you know, yeah. And like, it's how many people really know?
They're still big celebrities.
Right.
But we just love
this.
So this
is the challenge.
Thing, you know?
But this is the part that I think is really important.
Why does the royal family exist?
Well, that I don't know. But from a, if we were to try to like, who polices the algorithms, I think is a question, the conversation that we're having.
Yeah.
The problem is that to get to the end of that, we would want to have some kill switch so right. that we don't all get sucked into to something that is probably not great. But defining that would be really challenging. I mean, this is one of the core problems with AGI. And so you wind up with the reverse of that, which is a system like GPT-3, which makes a lot of assumptions based on like problematic data sets and a handful of people who are making the decisions during coding. So again, if I like play this forward, this is an interesting, another place for a DAO. Again, not tied to finances, but what should those decisions be? What should the, like what should the data set be? What should some of the params be? Like, you know, and you know, nobody would care, but maybe some people would care. And maybe that's another way to think about this. I don't know.
This question is as old as time and has been asked, for instance, how is it that an entire nation would fall for Adolf Hitler and Nazism and follow in what was inevitably going to end in disaster? How did, and this is of course the work, Hannah Arendt's work, The Origins of Totalitarianism, that tries to answer, that question. And, you know, I think it in a sense she is, I mean, look, I probably should be the wrong.
Have you read it?
Yeah, but I'm the wrong person to synopsize it. It's kind of trivializing in a way, but she says it's loneliness.
I think there's something there for sure.
She says loneliness is a precondition for totalitarian domination, that if you're socially isolated, you're more likely to be attracted to totalitarian ideology. And I'm not sure I agreed with it when I read it. It bugs me still, but you see evidence of it time and time again. Mm-hmm. And, but there's something in our nature that draws us to a strong man and draws us to somebody who will tell us
it's
a mythology.
Certainty.
It's certainty.
Yeah.
We don't like
it's
thinking.
Certainty.
We don't like uncertainty. We much prefer
right.
it if we're told what to think.
There's another book called Cultish, which is somewhere in my office.
I read that book. I enjoyed that.
What'd you think? Did you like it, David?
It's about language is what's driving us to believe in cults. And the cults go from, you know, the Branch Davidians all the way down to your Peloton instructor.
CrossFit.
As well.
Yeah, and CrossFit. But the language, yeah.
And that they use the same language across all. It's
Soul,
quite fascinating.
I think she talks about SoulCycle. Compares SoulCycle to Scientology.
SoulCycle, excuse me.
Yeah. SoulCycle is definitely a cult. Everybody knows that. But, you know, but I think these are different facets of the same elephant. That, I mean, language, and Joseph Goebbels knew this. Hitler knew this. Language is a tool, a very powerful tool. Mm-hmm. And the language you choose is part of this. I don't think it's all of it. I don't think it's neuro-linguistic programming. I don't think, you know, if I say the magic words, you're going to fall into bed with me. But it's certainly a tool in this manipulation. The whole reason
Amy
it works, though, is we're
something.
So willing to go for it. We want to believe.
Amy brought up something about challenging ourselves, which I loved. And here's something, like often when you hear somebody speak,
I'm going to read this book, by the way.
Say,
thank you. This is great.
The common phrase people say is, oh, I like what so-and-so said. I liked what Amy said. I like what Leo said. But, and this is what we should be saying to ourselves, I like what Amy said because it challenged my thinking.
There you go.
And people don't say Never. That, and they should.
Never. Yeah.
Well, here, again, if I just bring the book and the conversation back to sort of tech and the issue at hand, which is like, should New York be creating draconian social media laws?
Well, you know, by the way, this was the story that we began with, and you know, nothing will come of that, right? That's just them going, I'm so mad at Discord. I mean, I admit 4chan, which, by the way, 4chan is exactly what Elon Musk wants to turn Twitter into. 4chan was very much part of this kid's radicalization. But he found like minds there, and he found the information he wanted, and it reinforced his own beliefs. So,
right. So again, this is all structured data. This is the problem. So when you have radical ideas starting to take over, they tend to share a common linguistic base, which is partially what this book is
find
about.
That fascinating. Yeah, that makes sense.
Right. But the problem is that that's like straight up structured data. And if everybody's using the same words and phrases, then you know, you have two options there. It becomes much easier to identify and remove or mitigate on it. And you can train any system to recognize those words, and they will evolve because people will come up with additional code words then to.
Right.
Right. But it gives you optionality. If you're looking at it as structured data, you can either deal with it and remove it, or you're making a choice not to. So, you know what I've got? Did I ever show you this? I have.
Hold on. Go get it, and we're going to talk about it when I got to take a break. So hold on just a second.
Okay.
But when we come back, Amy will show us something.
I don't know if I should.
Yes, you should. Hold on. Our show today brought to you by ExpressVPN. Watching Netflix without using ExpressVPN is like buying tickets to a Taylor Swift concert, but only being allowed to watch the opening act. Oh, man, how disappointing is that? Well, let me explain. ExpressVPN unlocks the content you want. It lets you, like any good VPN, change your online location. But there's a real reason you'd want to use ExpressVPN to do this. First of all, actually, there are a number of reasons. There's security, there's privacy, there's eliminating geographic restrictions. I do all three. Ever want to watch Doctor Who on Netflix? You can go to Netflix UK if you're already a Netflix subscriber in the US, and now you're in England. They invest in their infrastructure so you can watch high-def video because it's fast. One of the ways VPNs get blocked is because an address, an IP address, becomes associated with a VPN, and then the BBC or somebody else says, well, we're not going to allow that, and blocks that IP address. ExpressVPN rotates their address. They do a really good job of not only hiding you, but hiding themselves. So with ExpressVPN, this is one of many reasons to use it. You can just open their app, select a country, go to the country, run Netflix. You're already logged in. Suddenly you'll be seeing Netflix UK or Netflix Japan. Beautiful, beautiful. HD video without buffering. Not to mention the security factor of using a VPN. When you go, you know, on a Google search, even if you're in incognito mode, Google knows your IP address. They say, oh, hi, Leo. Not with ExpressVPN. It's not Leo. It's some other IP address. ExpressVPN works with everything you use, phones, your laptops, your consoles, your smart TVs. You can even put ExpressVPN on your router, protect the whole house. And because they've got servers all over the world, 94 different countries, man, the world is your oyster. Yes, it works with Netflix. It works with BBC's iPlayer. It works with YouTube. It's really a remarkable VPN. Here's the final issue with the VPN. Sure, you're protecting your privacy against the other guys, but the VPN knows everything you're doing. You want a VPN service that protects your privacy the same way you protect it. I'll never forget the time that I fired up iTunes and I saw this list of everybody's music in the hotel. I could listen to their music. That's when it hit me. You know, I probably should be using ExpressVPN. There was a great article on Bleeping Computer about ExpressVPN and how they do it. I was so impressed. They run a custom version of Debian, and it gets wiped completely every day. So there's nothing on the hard drive. Furthermore, with their trusted server technology, they are launching a RAM-only server that Sandbox can't write to the hard drive. So it can't write to the hard drive. It's wiped regularly on reboot. There's a verification system that prevents insider code tampering. It's patched every week with clean installs on every ExpressVPN server. So when I read this on Bleeping Computer, I thought, you know what? This confirms what I always thought. ExpressVPN, it works better. They invest in infrastructure. They protect your privacy. And all of this for less than $7 a month when you go to expressvpn.com/twit. Be smart. Stop paying full price for streaming services and only getting access to a fraction of their content. Get your money's worth. ExpressVPN.com/twit and sign up for a year package. You'll get 3 months free, big discount, less than $7 a month to protect your privacy, to put yourself anywhere in the world. It's amazing. Worth every penny. It's the only VPN I use, the only one I trust. ExpressVPN.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support of Twit. They've done a really good job of making this service. Now, Amy Webb is going to show us something. Ta-da! Is it a book?
I shouldn't. So I collect, I like to collect rare books, hard to find books, books on weird topics. And obviously, like any type of book that was predicting the future, you know, like foretelling the future. I also really like dictionaries. I got my hands on a copy of something I'm not sure I'm supposed to have. This is the technical dictionary for Scientology.
They're going to be coming to your door. Knock, knock, knock.
They might be. And I'll know what they're talking about because I've like read a lot of this.
So Scientology, which is definitely a cult, has a lot of secret lore that you have to pay to get to. And I imagine that book is one of those.
There's a lot of, so again, like language is so interesting because it's a way of creating in and out groups. It's a way to manipulate, create, exercise power. And which again, why, when we think about language,
look up Xenu.
Tech,
is Xenu in there?
Let me take a look.
X-E-N-U.
Moment, please.
We could get in so much trouble. I had a girlfriend who was an ex-Scientologist. It is the hardest thing ever to get out of.
No, there's four entries, X1, X2, X-Unit, and X. X1 is a code number of a process, X-Unit.
This is
a theory
all
relative
the
to...
Maybe look under L for Lord Xenu. Awesome. The things they did to her to try to keep her in Scientology were mind-boggling, including putting a bullet in her mailbox, a 45 bullet in her mailbox.
God. Lord.
No, Lorzy. So you do not have, I'm sorry to say, you have not paid sufficiently to get the final materials. There was released it, the stuff in the safe, you know, that you have to get clear to get. Somebody released it.
Crazy. This was first printed in 1975. But again, it's just, there's thousands and thousands of words in here. And if you're serious, you know, if you want to continue to rise up, you have to know what all of this means.
Yeah.
So again, think about this in terms of tech and structured data and taxonomies and the nomenclature and like the words that are getting used to train systems to learn and understand and talk. It's like, it starts to be like totally mind bending. If you think about the power that we are giving to decisioning systems based on a handful of people's like language, like word selection, you know?
I think the good news is...
Leo, wait a second. Leo, I think she just got this book so she could cheat on the test.
You know, no looking into the soul of the person next to you, as Woody used to say. Yes, I'm glad you have that, Amy, and I hope that you survive the night.
Thank you.
That's all I can say. Do you have other artifacts from religions worldwide?
I do. I'm very interested in religion. Again, like it bugs me a little bit that some people I really admire in science have become hardliners on religion or you know, like there is no God, right? I think that just, I don't know, maybe I don't have the sufficient data to make that decision.
We'll know when we're dead or not.
So again, like I don't want to go through life. It took me a while to get to this point, but I want to be open to possibilities. Yeah. I want to learn new things.
No, I agree. I'm 100% there. Yeah.
You know, and I know I don't what my judge, I core really values
to,
are.
I don't judge anybody for anything that they believe, even if they thought the sky was green. But
hold it, wait. If they thought the sky was green, how much would you believe anything else they said?
Well, it might be green to them. Green's just a construct.
No, well, somebody in the chat brought this up.
Well, if they're colorblind, that's a whole different issue.
Well, that's the point. We don't know. Do
there
we?
You go.
Yeah.
So I lived in Japan for a long time. And as I think a lot of people who listen to the show know, I speak Japanese fluently. And somebody brought this up in the chat. But owl is the name. So there is no... The words for blue and green kind of get interchanged a lot in Japan. Like a stoplight is owl, which technically means blue, but it's definitely green. Again, like...
I think we're a little
our creativity, our thinking is a little hamstrung by the absolutist language that we use. And I think that's, again, we're training machines to do the same.
This is why I do think you're an optimist, because I am I used to be an optimist. And now as a reformed optimist, I'm very pessimistic. And, there's nothing worse than a lapsed Catholic or a reformed optimist. We're the worst. But I kind of am thinking it's hopeless and we are so mired. We do not know what we don't know to the nth degree. And we're so mired in our, brain patterns that it's just hopeless. And the good news is GPT-3 notwithstanding, we're never going to have self-driving cars or artificial intelligence. That's impossible.
Oh, I think we've already got AGI.
Where?
Ian Goodfellow just left and went to the place where it's being invented.
The place. That's actually another one of our stories. He was the Apple guy who'd come from Google to go to Apple.
Well, yeah.
Who is the king of GPT-3, or GAN, right? He's the guy.
Well, GAN. So, right. Yeah. He was the first person to really,
adversarial
network,
which is a very deep form of machine learning.
His papers, early papers, are fascinating to read now.
And he was unhappy with the requirement to come back to work. He liked working from home. Who knew? Mm-hmm. And said, for that and other reasons, I think, decided to leave Apple and then go back to Google. There was a great quote. This is from TNW, Tristan Green. He said, to put this into a sports analogy, what Apple's done is like letting Tom Brady or Michael Jordan leave your team over a disagreement between them and the team owner on how towels should be folded.
That kind of happened to Jordan, though, didn't it?
Yeah. To be honest, it happens. Let Goodfellow and his team work from wherever they want. If they think they can code a better machine learning model from the International Space Station, you should probably look into building a rocket. You think that AGI is where?
Absolutely. It's here. This is the problem.
How do you define it? We know the Turing test is bogus.
It's a lot of, so the benchmarks have typically to do with language. So there's something called the GLUE, G-L-U-E benchmark, which is an acronym that stands for stuff. That got surpassed. There's Super GLUE, that's been surpassed. There was the Arctari benchmark.
We can't even define the problem.
So this is the problem. We talk about systems being generally capable of performing multiple tasks at once at or above the level of humans. I would argue that we are already starting like AlphaFold, uses language, uses decision-making, uses recognition, making decisions. We already have systems that I think evidence sort of the outer edges. We have edge cases now.
Yeah, but so they're very specific domains. So I always think of AGI as more...
It's like computer?
Yeah, like... Well, no, computer like just Star not Trek? In any... I mean, you could say, indistinguishable from human. Steve Wozniak said, if a machine could come into your house and make a cup of coffee on the
machine
Coffee...
machine is in my house. I've got a machine that makes automate most of the stuff, and I do very little. I've got machines that make me coffee. I've got machines that are... connecting me to you from I'm on the East Coast.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing in a way. But these are all very narrow. It's not, that's why I say general intelligence, because these are all like, well, yeah, of course, machines can do a lot of things. But honestly, that's algorithmic, in my opinion.
The problem with the current benchmarks is that you're right. They are specific. They are mostly tied to specific types of language. But you have to have the benchmarks because that's what galvanizes activity in the research community, because people want to beat them.
Yeah.
I think we have to just define. So in the last book that I wrote, The Big Nine, I actually came up with a different, my version of what a better benchmark would be. It's called I called it the meaningful contribution test, which is where you would have an AI system like the A word, for example, disembodied voice, sitting in on a meeting with you, and it would sort of automatically, intervene or be a part of conflict conversations. It would automatically.
See, I think that's super hard.
And
much harder than we think.
I think that's,
I feel like the first 80% is easy. It's the last 1% that's impossible. And I think that's
everything.
Yeah, it's everything. And I think that that's really, we've underestimated that last 1% all this time. You know, EU is proposing that every social network should be responsible for the content of that network, not only child sexual abuse material, CSAM, that's what Apple was proposing with a CSAM scanner for the iPhone, but of grooming behavior. So this raises a number of things. First of all, that means no end-to-end encryption, because if WhatsApp is responsible for all the conversations on WhatsApp, they can't encrypt them. They've got to be able to see them. But then there's even a more difficult nut. What is grooming behavior? How do you know? Do you know? Can you identify it accurately enough to send somebody to jail?
I didn't even know what that word was. I'd never heard that until.
But you know now.
Very. I do. Unfortunately, yeah.
It's what I've been grooming you for months.
The hives, they're coming.
But that's the thing. If you say, if I said to David Spark, ASL, age, sex, location, which was the acronym on an AOL AIM, some would say that's grooming behavior, right? It could certainly be the first step in grooming behavior. But maybe I just want to know David better. And how is by the way, it's not yet the law in the EU, but this is a serious proposal that could very well become law in the EU. And bizarre. I don't know how you would enforce it.
I think we're going to look back in 100 years. I've been...
you're going to be around in 100 years?
I wish.
I hope not. No.
No, wouldn't you want to be... If you could be poured into...
Of course.
Yes.
Of course.
Yes. Oh, yeah. If I could go far enough in the future, absolutely.
No, but maybe...
I would need to go farther than 100 years.
I got about 18 years left. I'm hoping between now and what is that? 2038, that somebody will figure out how to put my brain in a jar... I could live forever.
Well, right now your brain needs to figure out basic math because it'd be 2040.
Okay, whatever.
Here's what I've been thinking
I'd be really
a lot
good
about.
At that, you know,
I've been thinking a lot that you go 100, 150, 200 years into the future, those people are going to look back at us, the generation that's alive right now. And we're the generation that, we're going to look so primitive, right? We are the ones who started things. We're like cave people in a good way.
Right.
James Webb is going to start porting back images that are literally going to, have to confront our interpretation of reality.
Yeah.
I also think looking back at us now, we're going to look like barbarians the weapons that we're using, the weapons are like bludgeons, right? We look at the way people fought 1,000 years ago and we say now, how could anybody have lived through
that? Horrible.
I think they're going to look at our digital tools.
Sure. Of course they are.
And they're going to say the same types. It's going to be the same analogy about us. I personally would love to be the generation that's like, hey, we figured out like picks and shovels and how to make fire. And then we did some good stuff with those tools versus we were the barbarians, you know?
But isn't it always those guys were really, you know, they didn't take baths. Isn't that, they thought baths were unhealthful. I mean, aren't they always barbarians in the distant past?
Yes, but in a way that I think is.
We're going to be worse. I think they're going to look back at us and say, what the hell were you thinking? Digging, you got energy coming in from the sun in almost infinite quantity, and you thought it was a good idea to dig up animal matter from under the ground and burn it. What the hell were you thinking? That's what I think they're going to think.
No, of course. But it's I've been having fun going pretty far out thinking, what are the things that we are the first, really the first? I mean, yes, in 69, we like humans went to the moon. That's fine. But this
pretty
is
good.
Something
that's
different.
That's pretty good.
Right?
Yeah.
That's pretty good. But we're on the cusp of doing totally different types of like building a space economy and becoming a multi-planet species, which is pretty amazing. We're engineering cells. We're programming cells. We're programming money.
Well, that's what this book is about,
right? We're this transition.
This is what you're saying in the Genesis Machine is we're on the cusp. We're on the edge of a...
Well, we are the edge. We are that... We're the transition generation. Yeah. So it makes me excited.
Yeah.
It also makes me feel this sense of urgency, like we got to all make good choices here.
Yeah.
You know, so that... Anyways.
Well, no, that's right. It's, you know... If you're shooting at Mars, 1 degree off at the beginning could be a million miles at the end. We gotta aim carefully. Of course, we're not habitually inclined.
Cleo, why
do
you want to blow up Mars? What did Mars do to you?
Did you watch The Expanse? The Martians are.
They really ended up poorly.
On the show.
Yeah.
On the show.
Yeah,
some
yeah.
of them.
Yeah. So
no, but in real life, the Martians are very nice.
So that's a really good point. So for instance, somebody like Elon and others are saying we gotta go to Mars, we gotta live on Mars, we gotta inhabit Mars. Incredibly difficult, probably not valuable. And
we have places here on Earth that have oxygen.
Yeah. At this point in time, it would be better to make sure that this place right here is in good shape. Is that the kind of aiming you're talking about?
We could do both. It doesn't have to be an either or. This is the argument that gets made, right? Why do we have our sights set on Mars? We should make things better.
Right.
Again, like, can't we operate in two cognitive spaces at once? It takes a little bit more energy, but why can't we work on both? You know?
I'm up for that. I don't mind that. I do think sometimes...
I don't know why everybody's obsessed with Mars, though.
We say, well, yeah, I don't... Yeah. But sometimes we use that as a way of... avoiding our responsibilities on Earth. And that is a little risky, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Would you go? Would you get on SpaceX?
I'd go on a one-way trip.
Would you make the return? Would you make one of
Which
the
one? You have
the
18
flights?
Years left. Wait a good 17 and a half
years. In 17 years, I'm on my way.
Would you, if money was not an object, here's what I'm asking. Would you hop on a SpaceX capsule and, or Blue Origin? They're not really going to space, but would you
yeah,
go up?
I don't, I want to get my wings. So I'm going to bring my glyph.
They're not conferring wings.
I know.
They're not
conferring
wings to, you're not, an astronaut.
No, you don't, you
so
have
not,
to go. So I want to go to the ISS. I want to do an experiment to see if synthetic whiskey, I don't know, something in space. And I want to get my wings. Yes, I would.
Better get to the ISS fast before it's decommissioned, since there's no funding for it.
No, I would love it. I've always wanted it since a kid, because I grew up watching, Gemini and Mercury and Apollo. And that to me was the height of the future technology. I always wanted to do that. Yeah, I'd do that in a minute. Let's take a little break. Boy, I think we did two stories.
That's my fault. I'm sorry.
No, there's no rule that we have to do all the stories. I was a little worried when the show began that we had a light rundown. Apparently not. But we will get to more.
Filling up time is not the problem.
That's not the problem. You're exactly right, David. So what? So between Tech TV and your new CISO
series,
the CISO series.com, what have you been up to?
But then, well, the most interesting thing is what I'm doing right now, CISO series. It's if anyone's listening, they're in the cybersecurity industry, or you want to be.
You don't want to be talking about your time in the Merchant Marine and.
I was not in the Merchant Marines.
Okay.
Fighting
in guerrilla wars across the globe.
Are doing this extraordinarily well in terms of making tech entertaining, interesting, fun.
Now you're grooming me.
Are you breaking out in hives yet?
Yes.
The thing that we're trying to do in cybersecurity specifically, and I know you have your security now show as well, We're just trying to make it fun. We're trying to make it entertaining. We got a great community of people. Honestly, this whole concept started because, I don't know how much you've talked about it on your shows, security vendors and security practitioners are like butting heads constantly.
Yes.
And, you know, the problem is, and it's this weird dichotomy of how the industry works, is you've got somewhere, and we don't know exactly how many, but there's somewhere between 3,000 to 5,000 security vendors out there. And then they're all
they all advertise with us.
You would hope. But they're all selling to CISOs. And so what's happening is just CISOs can't, they got to run their environment. They got to secure their environment. They got to work with their team. They're managing and also working with the business. And then at the same time, they have to look at new security solutions. So
it's a challenging space. Absolutely. It's
very, very challenging.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we began the network with the original mission of how can we ease this conflict that's going on and stop blaming and figure out a better way to communicate.
Love it.
And then it's grown out of that, actually.
Love it.
Is where
it
came.
So nice to have you. CISOSeries.com. Of course, Amy Webb, the greatest, the futurist, the author of so many good books, including, and a must read, The Genesis Machine, her latest, which is, it reads like a novel, except it's true, which is so fun. Actually, when we come back, you know, this is an important day in my life. May 22nd. On the 22nd of each month, I get two new Audible credits. And you already used up one with Cultish. So maybe when we come back...
I listen to the audiobook. That's how I read
Cultish. I listen to everything. I need a new book. So maybe you guys can come up with some recommendations. I'll show you what's in my wish list. You can maybe review those and decide which ones I should read. Our show today brought to you by... my new thing, Noom. It's not new. I've been doing Noom for a year. Lisa, my wife, to support me. Isn't that great? Did it too. And she not only supported me, of course, she lapped me. She's looking great. And what's great about Noom is it's not a diet. It's a way of life that will lead to greater health. It's not just about losing weight, but Noom weight will help you in your path to feeling great, weighing the right amount for you, and most importantly, change the way you think about food. It is not a diet because you don't have to change your lifestyle. Noom doesn't believe in restricting what you can or can't eat. Instead, Noom gives you knowledge. This is, of course, the secret, isn't it? And the wisdom you need to make informed choices, and then gives you the encouragement you need to stay on that path. It's a psychological approach based on things like cognitive behavioral therapy, which really, really works. With Noom, you get a number of tools. You get the app. You can track everything you're eating and drinking and all the exercise you're doing. You get a coach, personal coach. You get a group. It helps you understand your relationship with food and build sustainable habits that last a lifetime. When I first started Noom, I went and I told my coach, I said, I feel bad. I had a hot dog. She said, no, there's no bad foods. You can have a hot dog. I said, what? What kind of diet is this? She said, Leo, I've told you again and again, it's not a diet. There are no bad foods. It's about making informed choices. What I was really doing that was bad that I had to learn to change was fog eating, eating unconsciously, coming home and stuffing my mouth. And Noom has really helped me build sustainable habits that are also fostering my health. Noom understands building long-term positive habits is hard. And yes, it has its ups and downs. They believe in progress, not perfection. Your journey is going to look different from everybody else, but it is grounded in science, and it's the heart of everything they do. They've published more than 30 peer-reviewed scientific articles for users, practitioners, scientists, and the public about what they're doing and how it works. And I encourage you, if you want to know more, to read up on that. You can start at the website, noom.com/twit. When I first started Noom, they give you a fairly long questionnaire. They're really digging into what you're doing, your habits, how you feel about stuff. Do you stress eat? Do you fog eat? Do you let the elephant take control? All of that. And it's really, you even in the onboarding process, a beginning of learning about yourself and knowing what's going on. You don't have to worry about ruining the whole program with one off day. It helps you get back on track. You fit it into your life. So you decide how much time you want to spend on Noom. how fast you want to lose weight, 5, 10, 15 minutes a day. All of that is in your control. And that's really what Noom is about being in control, not forcing anything. I'm such a fan. It works so well. And if Lisa ever sees you, you just ask her about Noom and prepare, because she will tell you how great it is, the whole story. It's really fantastic. It's really fantastic. In fact, you can read it online. Go to Noom, Noom.com/twit, and start building better habits today. Of course, they have a trial, so at least do that for yourself. Noom.com/twit. See if it works for you. I think you'll see why it is now becoming such a great choice for so many people. And I love the community that I had in Noom and my coach, and we communicate regularly. There's also a great Noom subreddit with lots of additional ideas. I just think Noom is fantastic. Noom, Noom.com/twit. I want you to sign up for your trial. If you've been looking for something, this may be the thing you're looking for. It was for me. Noom.com/twit. Thank you, Noom, from the bottom of my heart. Seriously. All right. By the way, one of the things that's kind of a through line in this whole conversation is we were talking even before the show started about Elon again this week saying we're going to have fully self-driving cars next year, which he's been saying every year since 2014.
One of these years he'll be right.
Well, but I think it's also a testament. I think he believes it. It's a testament to how hard that last little bit is. Almost impossible. This is the week that Apple, apparently, according to Bloomberg and Mark Gurman, showed its glasses, VR, AR, I don't know, to the board. Apple's got the WWDC keynote coming up June 6th. I imagine they may say something then in a month. They may say something in the fall. The rumor is we'll sell something this year. This is a really good example. Google at Google I.O. showed some thick spectacles that put translations up in your heads-up display so that a young woman could talk to her mother. Her mother speaks Mandarin. The woman speaks English, and she could see the translation in English on her glasses. The mother could see the Mandarin translation. They were able to talk to one another. Amy, are you?
Do you think that? Go ahead. Do you think that's the killer app? That's my question. Is because like I have those Quest goggles from Facebook. What do you think is the killer app? What is the tool that'll get people to buy these units?
Not making people nauseated.
Well, I think the Quest, it doesn't make me nauseated. I must say that exercise apps is what I've used them for.
But there are plenty of people, and I include myself, who do get nauseated. And I think it's hard to sell a consumer.
Other ones prior to Quest
did bother you, but Quest doesn't bother. I don't have a Quest because I don't have a Facebook account, so I'm never going to have a Quest. Apple's probably – I'll get the Apple one, even though it's rumored to be expensive, $3,000. Because
holy
it's like
moly.
It's not pre-consumer release. It's a developer release.
It's not the...
Yeah. Okay. I want AR badly. I want to be able to wear glasses around that will give me extra information as I walk around the world.
So you want your world augmented.
In fact, Amy, I know you believe in it because you consulted... What was the name of that show? I really liked that show.
I don't know. There's been a lot of shows.
I know.
The
first.
You liked it? You were in a very small number.
What show are we talking about?
It was canceled. The idea was they were going to be the first on Mars. But one of the technologies, and I know it came from you, was, the young woman's wearing some stylish glasses, and they're talking about something. She said, well, let me show you. And she gives the glasses to the guy so he can see it on the heads-up display, the augmented reality, which he's talking about. Your consulting for this show was to kind of put them in the near future, right?
Yeah, I do actually a lot of work on shows and movies that are set in the future. There's one coming out this summer that is we will talk about offline.
It's a secret.
It's gonna be terrible. It's a secret.
It's gonna be terrible. That's not in your control, is it?
It's not in my control. But let me tell you about glasses. Yeah, that's the problem. One of the problems.
I thought the first was great, and I was really sad because it ends in the first season with them launching to Mars, and they're never going to get there.
Right. Here's the problem. It was marketed. The talking points were that it was the first group of people to live on Mars, to make it to Mars. And that's not what the story was about. Bo Williman, who did the original showrunner.
Love
he's
Bo
a
Williman.
Great storyteller.
Yeah.
Really great. Exceptional
he
writer.
He did House of Cards.
He did. He also did a movie called Ides of March. He's very smart. But the show was about getting to Mars, not being on Mars.
Right.
So there was this enormous disappointment. At any rate, on
I love Natasha McElhone.
Oh, she's great.
I'm not sure I want Sean Penn to be the first person on Mars, but okay.
You have to have a big name attached to anything anymore to get funding and to get production through. So
and I have a lot of respect for him. He's a rugged, handsome man, I guess. I don't know.
He's a name. He's a name. Anyways, with the glasses, so a lot of people would say, I'm never going to use VR. And by the way, VR has a very limited set of use cases.
Again, because they get a significant percentage, at least 10, get nauseated every time they use VR.
Right. So let's think about glasses like I'm wearing. And so
that's what I want.
In 2018.
I want your glasses.
So in 2018, I built this model that seems to be holding, showing the sort of plateau of mobile devices to be replaced by a constellation of other devices that all rely on the cloud. So this
hence,
one
Apple's
device
interest
goes away.
Because 50% of their revenue this quarter was the iPhone. They got to think, as this goes away, what's going to be next? Yeah.
So the model, the math on it is continuing to hold. And so the thing that I've been talking about since 2016, 2017, 2018 is that this is what comes next, glasses, which has been met with abject hostility or just you're wrong.
Here's we had a history of violence in San Francisco with people literally beating them, beating up the tech bros with Google Glass on.
But they deserve to be beat up, the glass holes. They deserved it.
But here's the data that we have.
Wait, are you promoting violence
against
on a media channel?
Yes.
Leo?
Yes.
in the United States.
Two people you could punch. Nazis and glass holes. Go ahead.
Yes. In the U.S., the number of people with myopia, which is the technical term for nearsightedness, is like a hockey stick. It's going way up really fast.
Is it?
Totally makes sense. Yeah.
Because we're all staring at screens? Is that why?
We are all staring at screens, and the tech has evolved faster than our biology. Our eyes were built to see long distances so that we didn't get killed by animals coming at us, not short distances.
Right.
So what we know to be true is most people are going to need some type of corrective lens anyway, and that is especially true of people who are very young, so kids especially, and after being through COVID, that caused a second bump in acceleration. So we're already going to need to wear glasses. Now, if your choice is you can have analog glasses, you can have like Plano glasses like that don't do anything, or you can have enhanced glasses with these other capabilities.
Yeah.
And if those capabilities are basically a heads up display, what do you think people are going to choose? It is a absolute certainty. I mean, I'm not certain about a lot of things. But I'm much more certain on. They have to get the technical limitations.
That's
overcome,
the problem.
Like battery and heat.
Yes.
Right? And right now that build is happening back in the, I'm pointing.
She's showing us her AirPods.
Temple.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually speaking.
Yeah, when I wear my hearing aids, it's got a big old battery in the behind the ear and the little thing in the ear.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
And that requires less compute. The hearing aids are amazing technology, what they're able to do, but that's not video. So that's a different challenge.
Right.
The optical, my husband's an eye doctor, so I've got some background on this. The optical limitations are not as challenging as things like battery life and, all of that, but it will be overcome at some point. So it totally makes sense that Apple would be going all in. Amazon
and there would be a market
has
for it. Yep. And Qualcomm just announced this week it's got a new platform for AR glasses.
Yeah.
Everybody's working
on it. I don't think this is about Pokemon Go on steroids. What I think this is a heads-up display. The kinds of stuff that you would be looking at your phone for, like directions. I think translation is more likely to be well, I guess you could have a heads up on translation, but it's that, like today I went on a, I do really long distance bike riding.
I saw you got a new gravel bike. Yeah.
Oh my God. That bike is, I don't tell anybody. I'm talking quietly because Brian's in the other room. I totally smoked him like hard and it was demoralizing. I pushed him to go an extra 6 miles and he was like ticked off. And then I couldn't slow down. It was, I've got so much power.
The whole sound geometry engineer is right now recording this at a lower level. So thank you for doing that.
At any rate, I've got a computer on my bike. I've also got my iPhone. It would be neat if the wraparound, super ugly, but it's fine, glasses, you know, showed me all the data. So that I wasn't having to look at my computer the whole time. Yeah, I know.
That's and here is all of the left pedal, the right pedal, talk about.
If you're like a data person, cycling is
cyclist. Wow.
Yeah.
Is that stuff you're wearing, or is it all from the bike itself?
I had a heart rate monitor on. I've got a wristband monitor on. I've got this really cool system from Garmin that I've got sensors on the wheels. I've got sensors on my clips.
See, David, she's living in the future. That's how she can be a futurist.
It's pretty cool. I felt like Tron today when I was on the, it was amazing.
Now, the question is, are you going to ride it again tomorrow, or is that it? Are you done?
No, tomorrow's a recovery day. I pushed it pretty hard today. I've got to do some recovery rides tomorrow so I can flush out my system.
The Diverge gravel bike from Specialized. I like Specialized bikes. But I bet it's not electric, right?
Oh, no, it's not electric. Yeah, you also can't get them. You're going to have to wait a year. I actually bought it.
There are electric bikes all over the place.
Electric bikes.
Yeah, they're great.
If there weren't so many gosh darn cars around, it'd be great.
Let me ask you, what percentage of bikes on the road where you live, Leo, are electric? What percentage would you say?
Up here in Petaluma, it's probably a quarter to a third. It's not
95% of what I say. I moved down to
Carlsbad.
Where do you live?
Carlsbad.
I moved. Okay. I'm now in Carlsbad in San Diego area. I would say 95%. Everything's an electric bike.
Yeah.
Everything.
If you look in our garage, we've got 4 electric bikes, 2 Segways, 3 electric cars. we're all in on electric.
Do you have solar panels on the roof?
Lots of them. I got more than 60. Good. I got a ton of them. And we got 2 Tesla power walls. So I just discovered
electricity. So let's talk smack about Elon.
Yeah, really. Well, you know, I got one of the first Model X's. So I got on the list like a year before. And when I was on the list and I thought, I can't say anything bad about Tesla because there was a blogger who said something about that Elon didn't like. And Elon canceled his reservation. And I thought, I better be careful what I say. Now I can say anything I want because I don't drive a Tesla anymore.
And also they need people to place orders. So
do they?
Don't they?
I'll tell you what. I don't know what it's like in Carlsbad. Or are you in Baltimore right now? Whatever you are.
Me?
Yeah. But
I
see nothing but Teslas everywhere. I see nothing but Teslas everywhere. I've never
seen Teslas all over the place where
I
am.
It's totally dominant all of a sudden. Everybody's driving Teslas up here.
I thought they missed their, I shouldn't say, I thought maybe they missed their quarterly targets.
Well, because of
supply chain,
You know, I feel like we're never going to be able to buy anything again. Better take good care of your iPhone, kids. It's going to get nasty out here, right?
Yeah. Anything with a semiconductor, I guess we're not talking about semiconductors, but that's a whole mess.
We can talk about semiconductors. So you believe AR is a real thing. David, you wear spectacles? I wear contacts, but normally I wear spectacles. I can't wait.
In fact, I already, when I buy my glasses, I choose all the options of the thinnest lenses, the highest
too.
Protection, the glare, the this, the that.
Yep.
I just have to click make it AR.
I will definitely make it AR. Absolutely. But I also think that's in the one that a working one is in the 1%, that hard part.
But I think what you said, Amy, is key is that what we're already looking on our phone will be on our glasses. It obviously it's going to take some time for that, what that looks like to sort of work itself out because the experience on the phone has taken many years to work itself out too. But I still believe there needs to be that one compelling reason as is there is with pretty much all new hardware. What is that one compelling reason we're doing it? I don't exactly know. Do you have a sort of thought on that?
Well, again, we've become habituated to talking more than typing. So I think there's some changes that are already underway that become accelerating factors. We're talking more than we type. We already have heads up display in other places, you know, and this one device aside, you know, there's different functions, but some of the sort of, again, everyday functions, quantifying some things that people are interested in, directions, translation. We don't need a phone to do a lot
one?
Of that.
It's like, I agree. All
I don't
of those
know that
things.
You need a one.
I mean, I do. I believe you need a one.
Yeah.
You need a one.
Yeah.
There's always, you just look at all the history of hardware technology, and there's always one, sometimes two or three, but there's always a few things that just drive the masses. And I always start with, you know, the story of the television. People didn't buy a television to see television. They bought it so they could watch the Milton Berle show. And so there's
the killer
each
app
sort of
theory.
Evolution. Sorry, what?
The killer app theory. You got to have the killer app.
Or the killer content, whatever
right.
it is.
Yeah. So Gary V had a big conference this weekend called VCon.
A lot of pictures.
Yeah.
A lot of pictures from that thing.
Yeah.
Everywhere
bringing
online.
Together iconic leaders from Web3 and popular culture. Steve Aoki pushed a cake into Beeple's face.
Yep. When I think Web3, I definitely think Snoop Dogg.
That Snoop Dogg.
Totally makes sense to me.
So Gary V, who himself made $90 million last year on NFTs, promoting NFTs with big names. Paris Hilton was there. I don't know. She's not a big name anymore. I don't know.
Deepak Chopra.
Deepak Chopra was the keynote. Yeah. It's all the scammers, basically. he said 98% of NFT projects will fail after the gold rush fades. I bet he did not say that when he took the stage at VCon this weekend. Maybe he did. Maybe he did. Who is the con here in VCon? And who is the conned?
Isn't con supposed to stand for conference?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I thought it was like con job. Okay.
Well, this is the second meaning. I don't believe that's how Gary chose to sell its event.
No, because if you've got an NFT collection you're selling, which he does, they're currently at $41,000 a piece, but he hopes they'll go to the moon. Your whole goal in life is to convince the suckers, I mean everybody else, that these are going to be.
Can we just pause for a moment on the whole NFT, on the crypto, which I'm sure you've spent umpteen times on. This is all based on the theory of convincing enough people, hosting events like this, throwing advertising, that something has value, even before all this existed. Just like a collectible item, the only reason some collectible item exists or it has value
is to sell on to somebody else. Yeah.
No, it's because there's another person who's willing to pay that price
right.
for that object. It doesn't intrinsically have value. It's because.
Well, this is even less so because you don't even get the baseball card or the painting.
Well,
or,
you do because you get the
you
the
get
certificate
bragging
that
rights.
Says that you have
get
the
bragging
original.
Rights. You don't even get an object. You don't get Bored Apes. Or snockered
Well, there's
owls.
Also the whole royalty payment theory down the line.
No,
well.
It's a speculative currency is what it is. I understand.
But it's all based on, look, just think about it. If all the marketing for crypto and NFTs just stopped, they would all tank.
That's
because
right.
Because they don't produce anything in themselves.
There's no value. Yes.
There's nothing. And so they have to have, this is why we saw, four ads on the Super Bowl
yep.
for crypto.
Yep.
While you see endless stories, endless marketing. The only way this exists, the product they're selling is endless PR, endless marketing, endless getting stories in the news. That is the product
you're
they're selling.
You're starting to sound like me, like a boomer, David Spark. I bet you Amy Webb has a different point of view.
I actually had a really interesting conversation with the CTO of Roblox last week, who I met a couple of weeks ago at something else, and I really loved his perspective. I don't think I'm betraying the conversation, him or the conversation we had, to repeat what he said. You know, his feeling about Web 3 is that in a way it's kind of like Web 1, right? Which is to say, it's the foundation, it's the TCP/IP, it's the initial protocols, it's the beginning. And the application layer really comes in at Web 4. And when I see the FOMO and curiosity and insanity around NFTs, I think it's a little like...
Imagine if Bob Metcalf said, I have just invented TCP.
Yeah.
And would you like to invest? Oh, he did it with Ethernet.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it's...
Vint Cerf did TCP/IP.
If Vint Cerf had said... For a small amount of money, you can get in on Web 1.0, baby.
I mean, the thing is, we have to continue to think about these evolutionary and developmental tracks, right? So I, from the outset, I understand what's driving the desire to invest. I think it's the same thing that drives people to do day trading. And there is a pretty big crossover in the group that day trades and is on, like, what's the name of that website? What's the name of the website where all the day traders hang out? Seeking Alpha. No, not Seeking Alpha. Anyway, I think there's a Venn diagram.
I wouldn't know because I am not a day trader.
No, but there's
Robin
a sort
Hood
of...
Robinhood a day trading site?
Robinhood's there's, one, yeah.
There's this Venn diagram. So I think that the people... I mean, listen, I don't know Gary Vee at all, but I know the people who were invited to speak, and it's, you know, there's like this collective of...
It's the same people.
Sells people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same and people. They go from event to event. It's like the old
Fire
revivals.
And, yeah.
Again, this is going back to my old theory. The product they're selling is marketing and advertising. Marketing.
Well, that's what Gary Vee's business
is. All these brand names.
Yeah.
You know, we saw what was that? The one ad that was getting everyone's credit. But anyways, Matt Damon.
Oh, yeah, Matt Damon. Courage favors the brave.
When I saw that, I almost vomited. I was just like, oh my God. That was courage. The thing is, everything else in our market that is like in the normal stock market, it is a company that is producing a product. It is producing something. There is something tangible. There is something there. And also in just the collectibles market, there is something tradable. Now, it's up to the community to decide whether that has value or not. The community is not deciding this. It is, we are being told something has value through marketing and advertising and celebrities and whom what. And the more of that goes on, the more they can keep the price up. Again, the currency will stay high as long as the advertising, the PR continues.
I have no problem if those people want to put their hard-earned dollars in some sort of cryptocurrency or invest in NFTs or I don't know how you invest in Web3. I don't have a problem if they do that. I just have a problem if they sucker people who are putting the rent money into it. So,
well, they are. I mean, here's the other thing. For everybody who wins, there's somebody who loses.
Right.
We can't all win.
Right. They ain't making something from nothing. And I'm ashamed to say some of the people who've been on this show, some of the people I really like and know, including Gary Vee, have become shills for this. And
because they made money.
And almost all of them made a lot of money. And yeah, you're right. You need to shill. You need to continue to shill. I feel bad about it. I don't think it's so. Normally, I would just say live and let live, but I'm starting to feel like there is this avalanche, and I feel like there are a lot of people going to get buried by it. And
what are the next order impacts?
Right. What are the next order impacts of a whole bunch of people feeling very emotionally connected and excited, and then losing a lot of money? Right. That's not going to be good when that happens, and it's going to happen.
Do you think there'll be a revolution in this country in the next 5 years? Like a violent
overthrow? No, I don't. Revolution? No. Are we going to... I think what winds up happening is, Leo, what you talked about a couple of books ago, the birth of totalitarianism.
Yeah.
The name of that book.
Well, that's happening.
I think that's going to happen in
2024.
I think people feel very dejected, and you wind up with polarization and you wind up with people desiring certainty and espousing certainty. These things are kind of interconnected. And again, like the government, not that the government should be, our government was way too slow on this to really, really think about policy. Biden's executive order, whenever that was a couple months ago, like finally telling federal agencies like, hey, you're going to have to come up with a policy on crypto and blockchain was a little, he was a little late to the party on that.
Why? Yeah. What do you think the reluctance was to regulate? It just that it's too new. We don't understand.
Because part of there's an existential piece of this. This is just my opinion, but like China's moving pretty quickly with its digital currency as an I think creating an alternative to the dollar. Right now, a lot of other, like the global economy is kind of pegged to the dollar and they're presenting an alternative future in which maybe that doesn't happen or need to be the case.
The European Central Bank says we want to create a digital euro.
Yeah.
So everybody wants to have the dollar, though. Everybody wants to have that currency that everything else is pegged to, right? And
right now.
Yeah. It may not be the dollar in the long run. It might be the renminbi. I don't know. It probably will be digital, yes.
It's probably going to be your good looks, Leo.
My good looks. You know what?
Stablecoins are problems.
Yeah, stablecoin. Tether. Whoa. Stand back. Yeah. We thought they were stable. Apparently they're not. I feel like this is not going. Web3 is not going as
well. Well, again, like all of these things right now are like, the metaverse isn't a technology, it's a concept. Web3 isn't a technology, it's just the name
it's
for the next iteration of the web. It's we're all constantly evolving and
is
building,
blockchain,
so that's a better way.
The TCP/IP of all this, is that in your analogy?
There are there's a lot of blockchains and they're public blockchains, so I don't know. I'm not like, this is an area of tech that I sort of float around in, but I don't have any real depth. I don't know.
Well, nobody does. It's all an interesting mystery. You did say something, though, that kind of triggered me there. I think, David, you must have noticed my lovely jacket. Did you?
I did.
Yeah.
I haven't seen you in that color before.
It's close to looking like a smoking jacket, but not a smoking
jacket. I actually have a smoking jacket also from our sponsor, Indochino. This was a hand-tailored jacket to fit my perfect body perfectly. Whether you're going to be a groom in a wedding party like our son just was, or a lucky, not a groom, hold on, didn't mean to start it on anybody. Michael got his first suit because he was in a wedding party and he looked awfully good. And we said, go on out there in that beautiful, look how good those suits look. Everyone wants to look their best for a wedding or a special event. Well, with a custom-fitted suit from Indochino, you will look great. You will feel confident. You will enjoy the big day without fussing over your clothes. I love it because it's like a it's kind of like Roblox for clothing. It's a construction set. You can choose every detail on your suit, on your shirt, on your dinner jacket. Affordable prices on custom-tailored stuff. This was made for me. And it, by the way, fits perfectly. Fits perfectly. You can customize every detail, monograms, fabrics. I love this beautiful purple silk. I got a kind of a velvet smoking jacket with satin lapels. It looks so good. I'm going to wear that on the cruise. I just think these are gorgeous. I got shirts that fit perfectly, monogrammed. You can get statement linings, lapel shapes, you know, custom tailored. Look at that. I might get like a red suit or a yellow suit. I might get something really wild. $429 for suits. Shirts start at $79. But these are tailored to your exact measurements. They offer completely custom fitted shirts, casual wear, and more. I think your husband would like, for Father's Day, a beautiful new suit or a wardrobe personalized to his style and taste without spending a fortune. Look how there. That's, by the way, that's the tuxedo I got, I think, on the right there. Doesn't that look nice? I'll wear it next week. They're always adding new pieces and options so you can stay on trend and in style. They've got a very nice, relaxed, but refined approach to spring suits. I love this jacket. I've always wanted a purple jacket. I just love it. They just, yeah, they have perfect suits. Look at that. $50 off any purchase of $3.99 or more when you use the promo code TWIT at Indochino.com. I-N-D-O-C-H-I-N-O.com. If you've got a big day coming up or just a big date, getting the perfect look is no big deal with Indochino. It was really fun. And by the way, now that they've got my measurements and they have, you know, and they've got me nailed, I love going in there and saying, you know, I'd like to maybe I get another suit, another jacket, maybe some shirts. It's really fun. I-N-D-O-C-H-I-N-O, Indochino.com. Don't forget that promo code TWIT to save $50 on a purchase of $3.99 or more. Get a luxury suit or a tuxedo. You know, every man should have a dark suit in his collection, and I think everyone should have a tuxedo suit in your collection with a nice shirt and collar and stays and, you know, cufflinks, just because you never know. You never know. Could be your wedding, could be somebody else's, but you want to look sharp. Don't you? I love this. I have been saving it because I didn't want to show anybody until we were talking about the ad, but I just love this jacket. It's beautiful. Indochino.com. You're going to see more of it on me. We had a great week this week on TWIT. We have a little video for you to watch and enjoy. I can't fit you and Micah into the TV shot. So those of you watching the video, there he is.
There he is.
He's still here.
He just doesn't
fit in. I need one of those iPhone wide-angle cameras.
Previously on TWIT. TWIT Live Events.
How Apple became a trillion-dollar company and lost its soul. Our guest is the author Trip Mickle.
Yeah, I think the difference that occurred in the wake of Steve Jobs' death was that this became much more of a leadership by committee. For somebody like Johnny, who didn't particularly enjoy, or all of a sudden he was thrust in a world where that was what you had to do.
iOS Today.
I am joined by my pal, my good buddy, Dan Morin, who is here to help me talk about apps for tabletop gaming.
Security Now.
When a ransomware gang gets so big for their britches that they suggest that perhaps a government which is refusing to pay their ransom should be overthrown. They said, if your current government cannot stabilize the situation, maybe it's worth changing it.
TWIT.
Like I said, too big for their britches. Jerks.
Oh, my God. That was an amazing story, David. The Conti gang, well-known ransomware gang, apparently has really hit Costa Rica hard. Mm-hmm. And Costa Rica doesn't want to pay the ransom, and they shouldn't. So the Conti gang said to the people of Costa Rica, overthrow your government.
When did that happen?
Just last week.
What was the aftermath?
Well, I don't think they overthrew the government. Let me see. I don't know. What's Conti shut down. Oh, interesting. The ransomware group appears to be offline, but the criminals behind it aren't going anywhere. This is from Tech Monitor. Conti has taken its infrastructure offline. This is as of 2 days ago, after the show. Members of the gang, which are currently engaged in a high-profile ransomware campaign against Costa Rica, are thought to be forming alliances with other smaller groups as a way of rebranding. You know, they probably went to VCon and got some ideas, some marketing thoughts. That's another thing, by the way. If we didn't have cryptocurrency, ransomware wouldn't be so prevalent because...
Yeah, well, that's... No, it's interesting. You have a combination. Here's the whole thing with ransomware, why it's so popular. It's extremely low risk, extremely high reward, and takes little to no skill to do it because now they have, like, ransomware
as a service tools. Well. Yeah.
Where else in any other kind of crime, do you have that wonderful combination? Low risk, high reward, little skill.
In fact, you'd have to be an idiot to rob a bank these days.
Yes, because it's very high risk. The reward isn't nearly the level, and it takes a lot of skill. Quite the opposite.
I saw on Reddit last week a picture at a Target or somewhere where they have the gift card rack, and a big handwritten sign saying, Do not buy and send these to whoever, AT&T. They are not asking for gift cards. But you know what? If the world weren't full of suckers, I guess.
So it's interesting. One of my hosts, Andy Ellis, who former CISO for Akamai for like 20 years, he did this experiment where he tried to actually legitimately buy gift cards on multiple different sites. And astonishingly, he got rejected many times. So gift cards is a traditional technique for phishing to try to get money out of a company. You target certain individuals, you know, often C-level people. But even when you try to legitimately purchase gift cards, because this is such a common vector for theft, those get rejected. I didn't even know that.
It was amazing. By the credit card company?
Actually, I don't know where the source is coming from, but the different sites that are offering gift cards will often reject a legitimate purchase. Now, more often, if you sign up brand new, you know, you go to Walmart.com for the very first time, try to get a gift card for the very first time, this is your first purchase, that will probably be rejected. And that's what happened to Andy.
Interesting. Wow. This is the new thing with the ransom. What was the ransomware group that disappeared? We thought, oh, it's all over. And instead, they just reemerged, rebranded. So this is if it gets a little hot, they're all in Russia, by the way. If it gets a little hot, if Putin says you're not giving me a big enough cut, they just disappear. They keep all the software and everything, and they rebrand, get new servers, new name, resume operation.
They run like a normal business. There's even customer service at these ransomware places. Yes.
Hey, I bought a decryption code, but doesn't work. What do I do? What's your customer number? Yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah.
It is. It's a strange world we live in. Let's see. I don't know. There's so many stories we haven't gotten to. I don't want to let either of you go without recommending books because I got really smart people on.
I was going to do that.
I got books for you.
Oh, good.
I got one fiction book.
Okay.
And the reason I'm recommending it via Audible is because the actor who does the read is spectacular.
Okay.
And it's the, I think it's called Hail Project Mary.
Project Hail Mary. Way ahead of you because we've not only read the book, but interviewed the author, Andy Weir, guy who did The Martian. And the guy who read it, Ray Porter, I completely agree with you, is one of the
great actor.
He is, in fact, okay, I'm going to turn tables on you because I am reading a series. I'm in volume 4 of something called The Babaverse, also narrated by Ray Porter. It's a Dennis E. Taylor's science fiction series. And that snarky voice that he has is perfect for it. The premise of the Babaverse is it's roughly modern times. Guy sells his company, gaming company, for a lot of money. First thing he does is sign on the dotted line to have his head frozen if anything should happen to him because he's got money. Immediately goes out the door, gets run over, killed. Wakes up 100 years later. This is what we were talking about.
Yeah.
He's in a box. He is an AGI, but he has all his memories, his personality. And then, of course, he clones himself, and there are now hundreds of Bobs. It's really a great story. And listen to this guy's voice. Ray Porter is so good.
I tried to respond, but what came out was something like a cross between a cough and static. For God's sake, that sounded like a voice synthesizer having a breakdown. Freud put down the tablet, leaned forward, and rested his arms on the desk.
That same voice as in Project Hail Mary. Completely agree with you.
He's a great actor. Half of the enjoyment was how good he did that read.
I think he works. I think he's on contract to Audible because Project Hail Mary and this were both done as part of Audible Originals. So I have a feeling that he's got an in there with Audible. Yeah. Great recommendation though. If you haven't read Project Hail Mary, you must.
I'll put those both on my list.
Babaverse is just fun. And Ray Porter has a long list of books that he's read some nonfiction actually, which is interesting. I think this is one of the things that happens with an audiobook is you start to like the reader.
Ghosts in the Wires, I saw you go by. I listened to that.
Ghosts in the Wires. Okay.
That's the Kevin Mitnick book.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Of course, we know Kevin very well. Amy, now I got to show you, before you say anything, I have a very lengthy wish list with some very good books in it that I only get one credit now. I've already used it, the first one on Cultish. Exploding the Phone, the Untoward Story of the Teenagers and Outlaws Who Hacked Ma Bell.
That looks good.
Yeah, doesn't that sound good? I got a couple of novels, Louise Erdich's newest. I love Amor Towles, his newest, The Lincoln Highway. Anthony Doerr has written a book called Cloud Cuckoo Land. I don't know. We'll see. Because Internet from Gretchen McCulloch, Understanding the New Rules of Language. I'm pretty close to hitting the buy on that one. On Tyranny, Lessons from the 20th Century. Too depressing. So what do you recommend?
I can give you a couple. I don't know if they're on Audible or not.
No, it don't have to be on Audible. Just to read anything. I don't know.
Right.
This is not an Audible ad, by the way. This is just us looking for stuff to read.
I'll give you three.
Okay.
The first one is the 90s. So I'm a Gen Xer. So Chuck Klosterman wrote this book, and it's sort of like what happened in the 90s that set the stage for today and what preceded it.
Oh.
I think he got quite a bit wrong, including some stuff having to do with like Soundgarden, which I think people who know me know I'm obsessed with. He got some details like wrong on some of these things.
I think I know you pretty well, and I did not know you have so many obsessions. I didn't know Soundgarden
my
was
favorite
one of them.
I love Rush. I think everybody who listens to the show probably knows
Rush?
That because I quote a little too much.
Have you played the Rush pinball machine, by the way? Have you played it?
Ooh.
No, I'm
it's
not
the newest pinball machine by Stern. It is excellent. Highly recommend.
Okay.
The Getty Lee.
My hand-eye coordination, not great.
Oh.
Not great. But anyhow, that book is fun because it's nostalgic, but also will be a little infuriating, but I've kind of enjoyed, like, hate reading it.
Did you ever read the book 1968, which was actually a classic work about a year that everything changed dramatically?
Yeah, yeah.
Similar idea.
Have you read
I
it?
Think. Yeah, it's really, really good. Highly recommend.
You feel like it's like, okay, I'll put that on my list.
Well, but, you know, I don't know if you would hate read it, but I thought it was quite good.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, like, you just like, I don't know, like I'm having a dialogue in my head. Well, it was a super fast read, and he's a pretty good writer.
You're so smart. I bet every book you read, you go like you have this dialogue as you're reading it.
I mean, I try to spend a couple hours a day reading, and I try to get through a book every couple of days or so because I, you know. Anyways, yes, and so I'm an active reader, so I tend to write while I'm.
Do you take
reading.
Notes?
Oh yeah.
You do the Zettelkasten thing, or.
I do the Amy Webb thing, which is just
this is all the rage
Facebooks.
Now with nerds is you know, make little slips of paper or digital versions of thereof.
Do either of you use those apps, Blinkist or Headway, to do those sort of abbreviated versions of books?
I use Blinkist, which I like a lot, but I treat that more as like a Cliff's Notes version.
Yeah, Lisa,
it's a very
will do
long
that.
Time for me to.
Audible has like 15-minute versions of every book, and I feel like that's really cheating. The problem I have with Blinkist is they keep tweeting in my tweet storm the 9 books Elon Musk read that, and I don't know. I'm not
I treat it more like. So it takes me a long time to dry my hair in the morning, and I have to hang my head upside down to do it. So I read the Blinkist books while I'm doing that.
And then if tell I like Amy it a about lot, towels and towel heads. Okay, go ahead.
No, it's like there's a
do
lot.
You don't wash your hair every morning, do you?
No, I don't. No.
You need a shower.
But at any rate,
but then it would cut into
my
your
point
reading,
is so. Okay. My point is, if I like,
can
the
we do a whole
Cliff
show
Notes
on
version,
Amy's hair regimen?
Yeah, let's do it. That and AI.
Now that's grooming.
It's a sample. It's a sample. And then if I like what's there, I read the rest of the book. Like I read the whole book.
Yeah,
so I
that's
don't
smart.
Use it as a substitute.
Just if I like,
or
idiot.
I use it as like a.
I did
I
that with Being Mortal, Atul Gawande's amazing book, which I highly recommend about gerontology and end of life. And
his
I listened
books
to
are very long.
The short version, and then I said, this is so good, and I read the whole thing. Yeah, it's really good.
He's a wonderful writer.
Really
anyways, the 90s, Whole Earth by John Markoff, which is about
I
the
read everything. John,
of
John's a good friend of the show, and he's been on our show many
he's
times.
He's a wonderful writer.
What's his new
the
one?
The book is great. So it's called Whole Earth.
It's all about Stuart Brand. Yeah, yeah. I've got to read that because I know Stuart as well. I was a regular on The Well. I want to read all of it. Definitely, it's on my list. Yeah, The Many Lives.
So I think those are good.
Stuart Brand. Okay, that's a good one. I'm going to put that one on my list.
And then for like super dense, heavier reading, but still I think a great book to have is The Ideas That Created the Future by Harry Lewis, which is a collection of the most important academic papers that got written that created the technology we use today. So it's like good to have on your desk.
Is that an older book?
Yeah. I've got it over on my shelf, on that shelf over there. It's
the kind of book that I'd put on the shelf, not read, but put on the shelf to show that I have intellectual heft.
I read it, and it's again, like, it's with all this stuff happening right now with
I should read this,
and some of their
honestly,
it's just, you can go back and like read, piece together how we got to now. I think it's useful.
It's
but it's not like 40, a fun weekend reading.
46 classic papers in computer science, although since it has Aristotle and Leibniz in it, it's not exactly all computer science, but Norbert Wiener. Gordon Moore.
Probably already read most of those, but I think it's just useful to have them in one spot, you know, and sort of.
Yeah, no, I'm going to order this. Yeah, this is not what you would call light listening for audible.com.
I wouldn't want to listen to that. Yeah.
And then also, I am definitely going to buy the Rush pinball game.
It's a great game.
Oh, you don't have to have quarters anymore. You can pay with your phone. I'm not a pinball person.
I gotta find
called Pay Range, where you pay via your phone.
We gotta stop the sound, or Getty Lee's estate's gonna.
I feel like Getty's cool. I don't feel like they would.
No,
do
Neil Peart's estate, like maybe though. Yeah. No, I love Rush. And now, you know what? Can I confess something? I don't think I could recognize a single Soundgarden song, so I'm going to have to. I'm sorry.
Yes, there is no Soundgarden pinball machine.
No.
Soundgarden.
Do they have some hits?
No, here's the thing that. They're good.
Black Hole Sun.
But my favorite song of their two favorites, Outshined, which is wonderful, and also Rusty Cage, which is a very technically complicated song to play.
Oh.
But. Johnny Cash covered it.
Oh.
And it's a wonderful, crazy, weird, interesting
version. That sounds really interesting.
I saw them live in Chicago years ago.
Did you?
Yeah.
Chris Cornell died it was 5 years ago this past week.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Go play the Rush pinball machine, Leo.
While listening to Outshined by Soundgarden.
Yes.
With headphones.
I love Outshined. It's a good song.
Yeah.
Here's another recommendation for you.
Yes.
Not book. The Pinball Map, pinballmap.com. You can also get it as an app. You can find where all the pinball machines are located near you.
So I could find that Rush pinball game.
You can literally look up Rush pinball and find what bar, arcade, whatever has a Rush pinball machine near you.
Oh my God.
It's a great, great app.
Let me just quickly type in Rush pinball.
Just type in Rush.
Yeah, because it's all pinball. That would be... I'll just search for that here. Not found.
No, it's somewhere. It's got to be.
No, I'm sure it is. That's probably I'm typing the wrong thing.
No, well, Rush.
No?
Is it finding the machines in your area?
Rush Pro by Stern. The one I want. Rush Pro by Stern. I think I just didn't qualify it sufficiently. Look,
there
it's all over.
Now you can zero in on
Petaluma. Or Carlsbad. Oh, look at this pinball Death Valley between San Francisco.
No, but you're only looking up just the one machine.
Oh, that's
you're
right.
only looking okay. up the one machine.
I might have to go down to the city.
Oh, I know exactly that location in San Francisco.
Uptown. Oh, I know the Uptown. Been there many times.
Oh no, I thought it was something else.
Oh no, that's on Potrero Hill.
It's like over 50 machines.
The Uptown is a great bar on Cap Street. Used to go there all the time. Okay, very excited.
Go play it.
You never know what you're going to learn on this show. Amy Webb, you are fantastic. Enjoy your gravel bike.
I will. Thank you, Leo. You are fantastic.
Oh, no, no.
I love that. And I do. I noticed that jacket right away because I haven't seen you.
It's not
it
typical.
It looks wonderful on you.
Yeah.
You
I wore
great.
With,
That's a
I
good,
thought I'd wear it with a black shirt.
Color.
Yeah, it's a pretty color.
Great.
Thank you.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
Is there an attempt to make all of us break out in hives?
I am now. You can't tell I am hiving.
No, that, I love that color on you. It looks
Thank
good.
Thank you. Yeah. The book is The Genesis Machine. Definitely, if you've not read this yet, and I know many of you have, because we had a great triangulation, which you could go back and listen to. Amy Webb, Andrew Hessel, if you haven't read it yet, get it. It is all about the future of biotech, synthetic, which he calls synthetic biology. And it's fun. It's a light and easy read with a lot of heavy information and ideas. I love it.
Thanks. And there's actually five, I think, actors who read that book because the middle section are scenarios about the future.
Yeah,
each
yeah.
Each one is acted out by a different actor.
Oh, nice.
It's kind of cool the way they did it, yeah.
And then the Tech Trends Report is out. You can go to futuretodayinstitute.com. That's Amy's company. Still haven't got the front page fixed, huh?
Yeah, I broke the code pretty badly, and then I destroyed a couple of other plugins and scripts, and we're going to gut the whole thing and start over in a couple of weeks.
Don't be messing with the code, Amy.
I know.
Are you a coder?
It's not my job.
Or you just thought you...
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I'm just like, it'll just be faster if I do it, rather than... Yeah. It's a delegation issue. I should not have...
No.
I have a team. I just was screwing around, and there you go.
It's your site. You get to screw around. The 15th anniversary Tech Trends Report is free for download at futuretodayinstitute.com. And of course, Amy is available for consulting your Fortune 500 firm and steering it in the right direction.
Steering it into the flames of hell.
No.
The apocalyptic hellscape.
No, that's bad marketing. No. No.
Right. We violated David's whole thing about marketing. There you go.
David, it's so great to see my old friend David Spark.
Awesome to see you, Leo. It's been many, many years since we first worked at the Tech TV days.
Now that you've returned from the dark side, we'll have you on more CISO series.
The Australians can call it CISO series. That's okay.
It's CISOseries.com. CISOseries.com. That's his new endeavor. And great.
And what I recommend is, you see the woman sort of cleaning there at the top, the little logo. That's, we do a really fun event every Friday.
Yeah.
And just go to the, you click on that, you can register for that. Actually, we're not doing this Friday because of the holiday weekend, but that's the following Friday, June 3rd. And we just have a great community. They're a ton of fun. You know what? One of the things I love about the cybersecurity community that not a lot of people realize, they're actually extraordinarily funny people.
I do know that.
Really, really funny.
I do know that. Really, Wendy, funny. I did a panel with Wendy Nather. She was great.
She's awesome.
Love her.
I adore Wendy.
Yeah.
I've interviewed her many times. She's the best.
So,
you know, she's the one who coined the term the security poverty level. Did you talk about that?
Maybe. That sounds familiar. Yeah.
She coined that term, and it's a great term. And just very briefly, I'll mention, it's about what the bare minimum you need to just be at sort of the poverty level of having a security level. And that is, it's a really important concept.
No, it is. Yeah.
We
the
have
minimum.
To
yeah.
all
yeah.
be
at least
a
do that.
Security poverty
yeah,
level.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, we, Amy, I'm rather, Wendy and I and a few others did a event at South By a few years ago before South By closed for the pandemic. And you were at South By this year, Amy. Did it go well? Was it nice? Was it good to be back?
Oh, it was amazing.
Yeah.
The South By community is a second family for me.
Yeah,
I've been going on and off for 20 years. And I think there were fewer people than in the past. And I think it's going to
Sometimes that's
to
not
grow.
Bad. I think there's the right number for any event. And most events, if they're good, get too big.
Yeah, I mean, pre-pandemic, I think they had like 100,000 people.
Yeah, that's too big.
So, my session, so I always launch our Tech Trends report there, and I'm always humbled and honored that so many people show up to my nice. Session. But I think I opened for Lizzo, because Lizzo is in the room right
that's
after
so
me.
So jealous. You should that's just cool. put that on
and,
your resume. I opened for Lizzo.
Well, I was like, crap, all these people are here to see her. They're going to have to like grin and bear it through my tech trends.
Will.
And then it turns out they weren't. Like most of the people got up and left.
They
so
left.
That was cool.
Good.
And then like she totally packed the house and I stayed. And she was amazing.
Oh,
Lizzo is
such
awesome.
A fan. Yeah. She is a goddess.
She's cool.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of yours, Amy.
Yeah,
I'm we all are. I'm a fan of yours, David.
Stop it. So. No more grooming.
You don't have to just reciprocate for the heck of it. I want you to know that you made me think differently, Amy, yes. on this show.
Every single time she does that.
That's what was important. I wanted to think. I wanted to be challenged. And yeah. I felt you challenged the audience.
Every single time.
And myself personally. Yep. And I appreciate that.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
This has been really fun. I hate to end it, but we must. We do Twit on a Sunday afternoon. You see why you don't want to miss an episode? Every Sunday about 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2100 UTC. Live stream, audio and video at live.twit.tv. If you're watching live, chat live with us at irc.twit.tv. Of course, Club Twit members get their very own enhanced chat room full of animated GIFs like this. All you have to do is pay $7 a month. You'll get access to the Discord where conversations go on all the time about all sorts of geeky subjects. You also get the ad-free versions of every show we do, every single show we do, and you get access to the Twit Plus feed, which has shows we don't put anywhere else. That's where we launched This Week in Space. If you will, launched it. It's where we do the Untitled Linux Show, Stacey Higginbotham's book club. It's going to be good this month. It's going to be Neal Stephenson's Termination Shock, another good book, well worth reading. We also do Ask Me Anythings. Alex Lindsay will be doing an AMA July 14th. There's a lot of reasons to join the club. I think it's a great community of smart people, and you're obviously one of them. So come on in, twit.tv/clubtwit. After the fact, of course, we put shows out on demand on our website, twit.tv, on YouTube. There's a Twit channel. There's a channel for all the shows. And you can subscribe to your favorite podcast in your favorite podcast player. But do us a favor. You know, we've been doing Twit now for 17 years. We're in our 18th year. And sometimes when something's been around that long, people forget about it. So put a 5-star review in there. Remind people about the goodness that is This Week in Tech. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can. Amazing.